This is the Quality News Network. 1 week after the collapse of a Mississippi River bridge, investigators say they may have located a flaw in the bridge's design. Navy divers aided inspectors who say gusset plates that tie together steel beams may have been designed poorly. Delivery of food and water to six coal miners trapped 1,500 feet underground in central Utah will take 2 days, according to the mine's owner. Bob Murray says reaching his workers will take 1 week. Plans to use an existing nearby tunnel were scrapped overnight after rock slides threatened the safety of rescue personnel. It is not known if the men are still alive. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki visited Tehran today to discuss peace between Sunnis, Shiites, and Kurds with Iranian officials. Iraq and Iran have Shiite majorities, and critics of al-Maliki say he's not fully confronted militants of the Shiite sect. U.S.-led forces in Baghdad battled militants in Sadr City. Airstrikes killed at least 32 insurgents and civilians. A dozen people were arrested. U.S. forces in Iraq have reached a peak of 162,000 troops. That's according to the Pentagon, the largest number since the war began 52 months ago. Afghan forces clashed with Taliban fighters today in the same region in which South Korean aid workers were kidnapped. 4 militants were killed, 6 were wounded. Israeli forces killed 2 Hamas militia today during a gunfight along the northern Gaza border. North and South Korean leaders say they'll hold peace talks in Pyongyang at the end of this month, only the second such diplomatic summit since the end of the Korean War. Pakistani President Pervez Musharraf could soon decide to place his country in a state of emergency, although no firm decision has been made. Officials with the Pakistani government say that internal and external threats, plus deteriorating security near the Afghan border, could make an emergency declaration necessary. South Carolina will move its political primary to January 19th to try and preserve its status as the first southern state to cast a vote in the 2008 GOP presidential race. Heavy thunderstorms ripped through parts of New York City earlier this morning, shutting down transit lines and causing one death, power outages, and flooding. Barry Bonds broke Hank Aaron's home run record last night in the fifth of a home game against the Washington Nationals. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
The Space Shuttle Endeavour is set to blast off within hours from Cape Canaveral, Florida. It's the Endeavour's first mission to the International Space Station in nearly 5 years. Scientists say they now think the Yangtze River dolphin in China is extinct. Researchers involved in a long-term study say the demise of the Chinese dolphin represents the first time a whale or dolphin has been wiped out by human activity. In New York, the nation's largest air carriers and aviation companies have filed a lawsuit against the CIA and the FBI. The suit asks for permission to interview 9/11 investigators and review data to assist the companies in defending themselves in lawsuits filed by victims and family members of the World Trade Center collapse. Apple has unveiled its new version of the iMac computer. The updated design is faster and sleeker and cheaper. Apple is the nation's leading PC manufacturer. Sprint Nextel reported a steep drop in quarterly profit, even though its revenues increased modestly. The wireless provider said its numbers were affected by costs associated with the introduction of a WiMAX network. Light sweet crude oil trading at $72.80 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. That's up 38 cents. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 153 points at 13,657. More on our website at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Okay, Tokyo! Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Six minutes past the hour, and broadcasting live from the employee sauna at the Head On Radio Network, it's me, little old me, Bob Kincaid, and the wonderful, not feeling so great, but going to do it anyway, because that's how it has to work, Agnes. And, of course, this isn't just any old edition of Head On. No, 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 no. You know what today is.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Darn straight. Because it's Wednesday, and that means it's prayer meeting time here at the Head On Radio Network. Come on down, brethren and sistren, and lay your hands upon the altar. Feel the healing waves of common sense a-flowing through your body from the subwoofer. So, that's, you know where we're going tonight. And, you know, there's a couple of different places we could start, but let's start at the top or bottom of the totem pole, depending on how you view things. I found out about this primarily from our dear friend Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com and his Your RDA of Irony, which if you do not receive daily in your email inbox, you're missing out on something. You really, really are. The post today titled, Unmitigated. Eugene, he is a clever one. He notes, Dateline Bettendorf, Iowa. Republican presidential hopeful Mitt Romney on Wednesday defended his five sons' decision not to enlist in the military, saying they're showing their support for the country by, and I quote, sit down, get ready for this, helping me get elected. Eugene also notes 160,000 troops in Iraq are now requesting immediate transfer to Iowa so that they can support their country, too. God, you're good, Eugene. He also notes Romney did not serve in Vietnam due to his Mormon missionary work. Romney did his missionary work in France, where he bravely contended with millions of caustic chain smokers. Actually, the Viet Cong probably would have been friendlier. You know, I think I can see the movie now with young Mitt Romney going up the Loire River in his black pants and his white shirt, a bicycle on his canoe, looking for the infamous renegade Elder Kurtz and his 92 wives, muttering, the horror. The horror. Yeah, really. Nah, Eugene wasn't kidding. This is a real, live, honest-to-Jesus news story. Mitt Romney's sons are being patriots by trying to get Mitt Romney elected president. Holy cats. Now, bear in mind, he took the question from an anti-war activist after a speech during which he called for, and again, a quote, a surge of support for U.S. forces in Iraq. Well, Mitt, you moron. Governor dog on a car. Mitt, let me explain something to you. Continuing the war in Iraq does not constitute supporting the troops. Bringing American soldiers home to where they can do some good in the world is supporting the troops. Making sure that there is adequate veterans health care is supporting the troops. Enhancing the funding for PTSD counseling is supporting the troops. Okay, are we square on that? This is the direct quote from Romney. The good news is that we have a volunteer army, and that's the way we're going to keep it. My sons are all adults, and they've made decisions about their careers, and they've chosen not to serve in the military and active duty, and I respect their decision in that regard. One of the ways my sons are showing support for our nation is helping me get elected because they think I'd be a great president. Bring me a glass of milk. Now, I added the milk part. What a low-down, scum-sucking, yellow-bellied coward Mitt Romney is. Now, see, I oppose the war. But I'll tell you something. Way back in the bad old terrestrial radio days of this program, I called a recruiter. And I asked earnestly if I could be allowed to enlist. Because, you see, unlike the damn Romney family, my family has been actively involved in defending this country and fighting for this country when this country decided it had a fight to engage in. Whether it was the Second World War, the First World War, the Spanish-American War, the Civil War, the Mexican War, the War of 1812, or the Revolution, there have been Kincaids involved, and other names in my family tree, and lots of them. So you could say that it's kind of a genetic thing for me that I would pick up the phone and make that call. I said, but, you know, please? Pretty intelligent. Might be useful somewhere along the way. Not a very good shot, but, you know, darn sure try. I reckon I can absorb bullets and bomb and shrapnel fragments as well as anybody else can. No, no, Mr. Kincaid, no thank you. You're too old. Then I got a little bit older, and they upped the age to how old I wasn't by then. But I felt that urge, and I felt that call, and you know, one of the things that sort of entered my mind was, I don't believe in this war, I don't support this war, but far better that it should be me than my son or my daughters. But see, grandson of a polygamist Mormon elder Romney doesn't feel that way about his country. Because he's a conservative. And as a conservative, Mitt Romney understands that it's somebody else's job to do the fighting and dying that he wants done. He didn't have the guts to go to Vietnam. Instead, as our good friend Eugene Finnerman noted, he duked it out among the chain-smoking French. And now his sons, who, by the way, aren't, like me, too old to serve. They range in age, the five sons, from 26 to 37 years old, and not one of them, has the guts, to answer the call of the war that his political party started, and his president started. Not one. Not one. What a... I'm sorry. I guess my southernness is sneaking out, isn't it? What a yellow-bellied turd Mitt Romney and his sons are. Cowards. Cowards. That yellow stripe runs down their back, down their leg, and clean into the ground. Again, I don't support this war. But there is nothing that I, as an American, would not do to defend my country. And I touched on that a little bit last night when the light began to go on in my head And I'm beginning to wonder if there's a paradigm shift or some sort of mind screw going on where Americans are being convinced that the only way to fight terrorism is to go pick a fight with a country that's a lot smaller and a lot weaker and get bogged down in a nightmare. Now, I don't know what, you know, it's the people who run out in the deep south now, and I can't, I know these people. I grew up with these people. And in many ways, they're fine, loving, and decent people. But now, every time there's an election, a lot of them run out and just, you know, yeah, I better vote for a Republican because the liberals are above, the Democrats are pussies. What's happened to them? These are the people whose grandfathers and great, or whose great grandfathers and great great grandfathers, some of their, you know, grandfathers, old folks, made the long walk home from Little Round Top. People whose forebears didn't own slaves, didn't have a dog in that hunt, but knew that they were being invaded. And knew that they had best stand up and fight whoever dared to set foot on their soil. For right or wrong, they fought back. And something has happened to this country. Something awful, something yellow has happened to this country. Because I don't think that urge to defend home and hearth still exists, because we've got to see, but all of this stuff rolls downhill, you understand. We've got a president who was yella when his country needed him in Vietnam. He was yella. It's just a fact. No getting around it. He was yella. And that kind of stuff affects the national psyche. For years now, I have referred to the United States as the coward nation, because we have become cowards. And it's sad. Ah, it's just sad. To the point now that we buy in to hokum BS about how, hey, we've got to fight them over there so we won't have to fight them here. Well, the reason they're winning over there is because we don't belong there and it's their home. But I have come to wonder, how many Republicans, how many conservatives would actually take up arms and fight an invader? And how many more would capitulate? You know, they're forever saying, yeah, we've got to fight them over there because, you know, they're Islamo-fascists and they want to take over the world! Well, there's nobody's trying so far.
And they want to take away my Bible.
Well, nobody's done it so far. Nobody's even tried. But what would they do if someone did? Most of these phony religion industry evangelical Christians would be hollering Salam Alaikum and Allah Akbar and throwing a rug on the ground and facing Mecca before you could say no more ham, because whatever happened to the spirits of Chancellorsville and the 7 days and Gettysburg and Shiloh and Bull Run and Chickamauga, whatever happened to those spirits is gone, 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 so that Mitt Romney can stand up in Iowa. My God, I've been to the battlefield at Shiloh. And if you want to talk about, if you can get your mind right and you visit the national battlefield at Shiloh, at Pittsburgh Landing, Tennessee, and you can cast your mind just so, and the light slants just such, and you can see those rows on rows of blue coated soldiers and soldiers in butternut, and you go to places called the Hornet's Nest, where the musket fire was so sharp, so fast, and so fierce, it sounded as though those who were involved in it were standing in the middle of a hornet's nest. And you look at the monuments raised, and you see the monuments raised by the individual states who participated, and you understand that on the 2 days of Shiloh, more Americans fell in battle than that young nation had experienced in any in the entire Mexican War, War of 1812, and Revolution combined. And you see monuments that say that have simple words on them, like Iowa, Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota. What this country at that point in time referred to as Westerners. And they came from Ames and Ottumwa. And they came from Bettendorf and Sioux City. And they marched into a foreign place, hot and snaky. Malarial. Because they had been told that their nation was falling apart, and they were not willing to see the United States die while they were alive. And you can go at Shiloh to that monument that says simply Iowa. And you can see where Iowa stood on the battlefield, facing down the likes of P.G.E. Beauregard and the greatest general either side had at that point in time, Albert Sidney Johnston. You can see it all. You can go to the Bloody Pond, where the water turned red and men dying of thirst, gut shot and knowing it was their end, just wanting to die with a little water on their tongues, crawled to wet their lips. You can see it all. You can see every last bit of it, and closing your eyes, you can see even more, and you can hear it. And I have. And for me to sit here and read that Mitt Romney can look Iowans squarely in the eyes and say, my sons are all adults and they've made decisions about their careers and they've chosen not to serve in the military and active duty, and I respect their decision in that regard. One of the ways my sons are showing support for our nation is helping me get elected because they think I'd be a great president. You see, the Republican Party has this little problem. The Republican Party, somewhere along the way, has confused political ambition with patriotism. Serving the endless, boundless ego of one's millionaire daddy is not the same thing as serving your country. Helping daddy try to become president is not the same as standing under the flag. And so, here in the hot and steamy days of August 2007, 15 months before we have a referendum on the presidency of this once great republic, Mitt Romney can look at the sons, the daughters, the grandsons, the great-grandsons, the granddaughters, the great-granddaughters, great-great-granddaughters of farm boys who answered a call and marched south. He can look them in the eye and tell them that his sons are better and above and more important than the sacrifices made by those very Iowans to save this very republic. Romney noted that his middle son, 36-year-old Josh, was completing a recreational vehicle tour of all 99 Iowa counties on Wednesday and said, quote, "I respect that and respect all those and the way they serve this great country." Mitt Romney, you classless, gutless, soulless, coward, yellow-bellied Republican freak, you. There is a big difference between driving between, Sioux City and Ottumwa in a damn Winnebago and driving between Baghdad and Ramadi in a poorly armored RV. RV? No. Humvee. Do you know the difference, Mitt? Apparently, you think your son in an RV is the same as an improperly armored soldier in an improperly armored Humvee on the streets of Baghdad. And Mitt Romney, I loathe you for that. How dare you! While Americans were fighting and dying in Vietnam, Mitt, you were cycling through France. And what's more, Mitt, while Americans were fighting and dying in the Civil War, where was your granddaddy? Utah! Looking for another wife! Killing the occasional Indian or infidel Christian. By the way, just in case, Romney is a bit, shall we say, he's touchy lately because he's been getting called on his stuff. You know, they had a candidates forum, what was it, this past Sunday on This Week with George Snuffleupagus on ABC? And Mitt Romney got called on how pro-life he is. And he got called by Senator Sam Brownback, who is just plain insane because Senator Brownback thinks that stem cells are more important than living, breathing human beings. Woohoo! We're having a little Romney moment here. Let's have a little Romney, Agnes. A little Romney noodles.
Beneath the radar screen on the issue of abortion. Senator Brownback, your campaign has been making phone calls to Iowa voters about Mitt Romney, and I want to show it for our viewers. It's called an urgent action alert.
Mitt Romney is telling Iowans that he is firmly pro-life. Nothing could be further from the truth. As late as 2005, Mitt Romney pledged to support and uphold pro-abortion policies and pass taxpayer funding of abortions in Massachusetts. His wife, Anne, has contributed money to Planned Parenthood. Mitt told the National Abortion Rights Action League that you need someone like me in Washington.
Senator Brownback, do you stand by that attack?
I certainly do. It's one word that describes that ad, and it's truthful. That's a truthful ad. And that's what the campaigns are about, too, George, is for as far as getting the truth out, expressing the differences between candidates. These are good people that are up on this stage. That's a truthful ad. I am pro-life. I think this is a core issue for our party. I think it's a big issue for our country. I'm pro-life and I'm whole life. I think that all life at all stages is sacred and it's beautiful. I think it's something we ought to fight for. It's what this party has stood for. It's what we should stand for.
Wait. Now, this is Brownback talking, and this guy is crazier than a run-over dadgum dog. I'm whole life. That's an insurance policy, you right-wing Kansas freak. I'm whole life. No, you're not. If you were whole life, Brownback, you goober, you wouldn't be voting to send more money to kill more Iraqi civilians. You wouldn't have voted to start this war in the first place, Sammy. If you were whole life, you wouldn't be retroactively supporting the abortion of living Iraqi people. You wouldn't be behind, cruise missile attacks on mud huts somewhere between the Tigris and Euphrates River. So let's not. Now this is it's fun to hear Romney getting called for being the filthy little liar that he is, but let's not have any misconceptions about Sam Brokeback. I mean Brownback. Go on, Agnes.
Governor Romney, everything in that ad true?
Virtually nothing in that ad is true.
What's wrong with
the single word I used to be?
Okay, now you heard what the thing laid out, that his wife gave money to Planned Parenthood. Well, here is an opportunity for you to hear non-journalism on the part, surprisingly enough, of George Snuffleupagus.
Desperate or perhaps negative.
But before
frankly,
we move on, you said it's not true. We have it up on the screen. What is untrue?
I am pro-life. That's the truth. And several years ago when we faced the issue of cloning of embryos in our state, I wrote an op-ed piece in the Boston Globe and said I'm pro-life. And every action I've taken as governor of Massachusetts has been pro-life. This is a very difficult decision. We're involved in the lives of two people, a mom and an unborn child. And yet I've come down on the side of saying I'm in favor of life.
But are any of the specific charges there untrue?
Sure. The Massachusetts Citizens for Life, just several months ago, brought me in and gave me an award for my public leadership on the basis of being pro-life. So the best way you can learn about someone is not by asking their opponent.
Wait, Mitt, the stuff that was said about you, is it true? Did your wife, or one of them, give money to Planned Parenthood? Did it? Did she or they do that? It's easy enough. George, could you ask him that?
Ask them, what do you believe and what's your view? And I am pro-life. And I virtually every part of that ad is inaccurate. I'm pro-life. My positions are pro-life. The idea that, for instance, I've been in favor of taxpayer funding of abortion, that's wrong. I oppose taxpayer funding of abortion. In our state, we passed a medical plan that reduces the number of people who receive state funding for abortion. So the ad is just completely wrong.
Wait. Taxpayer funding for abortion? No, I don't. We've put in a plan that reduces the number of people who get state-funded abortions. Then that means people are still getting state-funded abortions, doesn't it? Which means, Mitt Romney, you yellow-bellied coward, you're a liar! You're just a dirty, filthy Republican liar. Well, I'm sorry, I'm being redundant. I repeat myself. Dirty, filthy Republican and liar. Same word! Go on, please, Agnes.
I could. You can go up on YouTube and see the governor himself speaking about what he is, where he is on this position. And I
in 1990, oh, wait. Did you hear how snide he is? The Brownback says you can go out and look on YouTube. And Romney, that's a good source. That's a good source. Hey, Mitt, buddy. You elitist little puke. More people are getting their news from independent media sources, and that includes stuff that's put up on YouTube, than are getting it from your gatekeeper buddies in the mainstream media, like George Snuffleupagus, who won't even ask you a straight question. Did your wife give money to Planned Parenthood? I hope she did. I'm sorry, or they did. You know, we don't know how many wives Mitt Romney has. He could have a whole daggum harem just sort of in hiding. Because, you know, he's allowed to. But I hope his wives did give money to Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood does good work. You know, way back when Prescott Bush was done dealing with the Nazis and wanted to be senator from Connecticut, he was on the board of Planned Parenthood. Sure was. Mrs. Bush, Planned Parenthood. Hateful old broad with the pearls, the old Beast Bush, Planned Parenthood. You know, but they have their reasons because they're better than us, and they prefer Planned Parenthood so that you know, those people won't breed so much. Sort of up east eugenicists, if you will. Okay, let's finish out with Mitt now that we know that he doesn't like the YouTube.
Before Sam, the governor himself.
I was pro-choice. I am pro-life, and I'm tired of a person
who is a truthful position. That is truthful.
Governor Ron,
YouTube, and look for the governor what he says himself.
Governor Ron, you called it.
You can go back to YouTube and look at what I said in 1994. I never said I was pro-choice, but my position was effectively pro-choice. I've said that time and time again. I changed my position when I was governor and when I faced an issue.
Well, and that's what he's calling you on. That's called flip-flopping. I need to find that Republican freak that was following John Kerry around, see if I can borrow his little dolphin suit, if nobody else is already following Mitt. Flip-flop, flip-flop, flip-flop.
When the first time a bill came to my desk that related to the life of an unborn child, I came down to the side of life. And I put that in the Boston Globe and explained why. And I get tired of people who are holier than thou because they've been pro-life longer than I have.
Governor Romney, look, you've also been trying.
I'm proud of the fact.
Yeah, enough already. Yeah. Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney. Hypocrite, liar, flip-flopper, and coward. But his son is driving all 99 counties of Iowa to help him get elected president, and that's the same thing, America, he wants you to know, that's the same thing as not having proper body armor and having to walk around the streets of Baghdad with a bullseye on your back. Holy cats. Wow. Okay, let's go to the phones. Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
How are you?
Well, let me put it this way. Mitch Shum thinks it's great to drive around Iowa, and that's his public, his civic duty. I'll be sure to mention that to my veteran husband who's logged through the jungles of the South Pacific in World War II, and then later who waded waist deep in the blood of the Pusan perimeter.
Yep.
I'm sure he'll be thrilled.
You know, the American Legion's a little bit right-wing for my tastes, but I wonder how they would like to know, or how they would feel to know that Mitt Romney says toddling around Iowa in a Winnebago is the same thing as doing any of what you just described.
And I got to tell you, if I see any footage of him with soldiers at a VA hospital, anything, I'm going to start screaming my head off.
Well, then prepare to scream. Get your, you know,
right.
Get your throat spray and stuff ready because he will. Because
there's nothing
more mercenary where troops are concerned. There's nothing more mercenary than a Republican politician. It's bigger than baby kissing.
I'm also going to pass this on to via my husband to our local chapter at the VFW. I'm sure they'd just love to hear that because you can't get into that particular organization unless you've served overseas in a war.
Yeah.
And
you know, overseas in a war, bicycling around France, passing out copies of the Book of Mormon, don't quite get it, does it?
No. As for, you know, in case somebody says, well, hey, she's against the war. Yeah, I am. If his sons had had the courage of their convictions and stood up and said, hey, this is an illegal war and I ain't going, or if even he had had the guts to do it in Vietnam, more power to him. I respect that. Because you're putting yourself on the line.
Well, yeah. Sure.
But he didn't have the guts.
You know,
sons don't have the guts.
We have we have a very good example here in West Virginia. I've talked about him on a number of occasions, a young man named Tommy Bennett, who was very much opposed to the Vietnam War and went right in and signed up, says, won't carry a gun, but I'll be a medic, and he came home. Well, his body came home. With the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I never held it against Clinton for being against the war and refusing to go. Hey, I got no problem with that. He was open about it.
Well, precisely. There's a difference between Bill Clinton, who says, I oppose the war, I don't want to go, I'm going to try to figure out a way to not go, and say George Bush, who puts on the show of his daddy getting him into the Texas Air National Guard,
exactly.
And then can't be bothered to show up. Or Mitt Romney, who hears his country call and says, you know, somewhere in the wine country of France, there's
somebody just
some poor little Frenchman who hasn't heard yet that American Indians are actually Jewish.
Uh-huh. And I
say this to you knowing full well that you've got Mormons in your background, so, you know.
Yes, I know. Technically, he's not supposed to have more than one wife. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And I can get away with saying that because Granddad was Mormon elder.
Yeah, and so was his.
And Granddad was too damn mean to get more than one wife, and that wife he worked to death.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Literally.
I shouldn't laugh.
She dropped dead over a mop bucket one day. No, I'm not kidding. That's the literal truth. But if, if somebody is opposed to the war, like Aaron Watata, or like any of the people who are saying, no, I'm not going, this is wrong, it's illegal.
Yeah.
I got no problem with them. I respect their convictions. Especially Aaron Watata, because he's going to pay and pay big time. They're going to make him pay.
Yeah, he's going to pay more than the guy who kidnapped and murdered a dude in Iraq. Sure, we know
that. Oh, I want to bring something up.
Sure.
You remember that guy named Kokesh?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Whose rank was reduced after the fact for wearing part of a uniform at a non-military function.
Right.
Well, if you go up to I put it on our blog, but I found it on Truth Help. There is a video there of people making a promotional video for this right wing crazy nut evangelical Christian thing in full uniform at the Pentagon.
Well, there was another one of those at Daily Coast too. You familiar with that one?
Those people reduced in rank.
Yeah. And possibly, their discharge status changed.
Well, no, they were still active duty.
Well, true. But when they get discharged, yeah.
Yeah. I want them reduced in rank. I want them punished for doing what Kokesh did.
I don't have a problem with that. Sauce for the goose and sauce
for
the game.
Fair.
Yeah, sure. But will it happen? Come on.
Oh, hell no.
No, because...
But I want to raise a stink about it.
Right, because we know, Susan, that a double standard applies. I've got a story that I'm sort of working on. I don't know how it's going to flesh out. But I heard from a young soldier in Iraq who tried to set up a meeting, and he did. He went through all the proper channels.
Yeah.
And tried to set up a meeting, an atheist's meeting. You know, they say there's no atheists in foxholes. Wrong.
Uh-huh.
Wrong. So he went through all the proper channels, set it all up, put his posters up, and had his was threatened, was tormented, was pick a word, by his own fellow soldiers.
You're trying to help the terrorists win because you're an atheist.
Yeah, but he was not. Yeah, brilliant. Oh, here's another piece of military insanity. And it's up on our blog. It's up on the blog. A woman was raped by her fellow soldiers. She was in the Army. So she filed charges.
Mm-hmm.
She couldn't bring, and like a lot of rape victims, and this is very common, she couldn't bring herself to testify. She couldn't bring herself to look anywhere near them again.
Mm-hmm.
The Army has what they've done is they gave the soldiers, the guys who did this, administrative punishment, then made a deal. And they are now court-martialing her with the perpetrator's help.
Oh, for God's sakes.
And the guys who committed the rape get immunity.
Oh.
and they wonder why they can't get anybody to join.
Now, meanwhile, just to draw the distinction, Susan, meanwhile, you've got an entire right wing segment of the Congress having a hissy fit about two Border Patrol agents who tried to blow away a third party who was unarmed by shooting him in the back, and they're trying to get him out of prison.
I know.
But those same right wingers can't stand up for a female soldier who's been raped.
Yeah. Instead, they're going to let the Army court-martial her with the help of the people. Yeah, that's, geez, talk about being raped twice.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
This is a wonderful, wonderful military we have. We need to...
Yeah, everybody sing. No, I won't play it again, I promise. I won't. I won't play that song again.
We need to fumigate the upper ranks of our military.
We do. We need to fumigate the upper ranks. We need to fumigate the chaplain's corps. You know, our conversations with Mikey Weinstein have been more than informative. There has been, you know, we've worried, we've talked, we've discussed and cussed about what the right-wing evangelical movement has done to our body politic. But what it's done to our military is even worse. You know, I'm sure that these were good Christian boys who raped this woman. Do you have any doubts? I mean, I'm guessing they weren't Muslims. I'm guessing they weren't Jewish or atheists.
Hardly. Yeah, good Christian boys who believe it's a woman's place to shut up, lay back, and spread her legs.
Oy. Oy.
And five will get you 10. If they're married, they beat their wives.
Oh, I know. I know.
God, I just love this country. It's just...
Well, I love what this
such
country...
Such a beacon of wonderful justice and...
Well, but Susan, this country, if we didn't love this country, we wouldn't be talking about these things. Because these are
no,
things
No, I'd
that
be calling
be
in
fixed.
Canada.
Yeah. But these are things that are worth staying and fighting to fix. And
yeah.
Frankly... last I checked, Iowans are not prone to just wink at, you know, wink and a nod at somebody who's such an obvious coward as what Mitt Romney is.
Yeah, they're very, very big on service there.
The question is whether most Iowans will get to hear that.
Exactly. That's the kicker. And that's what I worry about.
Whether there's enough honest media in the state of Iowa to let them hear and see
yeah.
Mitt Romney explaining that toddling around the state in a Winnebago is the same as fighting and dying on the streets of Baghdad.
Jesus, that is just sickening. That's just...
Oh, I know. It gets worse for me every time. Every time I mention it, it gets worse because the mental image becomes more profound.
Oh,
you know, striker brigades and Humvees and, you know, folks on foot getting shot at by an army that doesn't exist and blown up by a military that isn't there.
Yeah, and, you know, in a lot of ways, we're like the British war in the American Revolution. Only this time, we're playing the part of the British, and the Iraqis are playing the part of... Marion Swamp Fox.
Yeah, well, that's the way it works out when you're the invader.
Yeah, exactly. You would think people would go back to American history and get the point. No.
Well, you know, we'd have to be paying more attention to American history than Barry Bonds' home run in order to do that. So, you know.
Yeah, that requires a functioning brain. You've got to be able to read.
Exactly.
And I'm not so sure about some of these people. I'm really not.
Oh, I'm not either. And it's what distresses me and disturbs me so much. Susan, it's good to hear from you, dear.
Well, you have a wonderful prayer meeting, and I shall come down and get my magic cracker.
You come down and get your magic cracker, and we'll let you sprinkle some pixie dust on the altar.
Okay, I shall do that.
All right,
yeah,
sounds
nice
good.
Night.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we'll take a quick break and come back. I need a couple of minutes to try to fix a technical difficulty over here. For some reason or another, I don't have any internets at my workstation. But I hope I will. So that's what we're going to do while you listen to a couple of messages or maybe some really cool music or Yeah. Maybe not that music, though. No, not that one. All right, Green Day it is. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
From the Night Sound Studios, here's Charm City's very own, sassy and classy, Erica Richards.
Join us at Night Sounds every Saturday night at 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern for a unique musical experience. You'll hear featured segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications hosted by yours truly, Erica Richards. Oh, by the way, the contact email information that we gave out during our debut is not in effect. So, to request a dedication, please contact Erica Richards at billyshearsmusic.com. That's Erica with a K and Shears, Shears. To reach Billy Shears, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. We'll be waiting for you this Saturday evening.
I never thought my daughter and I would ever think the same thing is cool.
At home, my boys are like a wrecking ball. But when they volunteer, they're actually shaping things up.
Hey, they plant a tree at the local park. Clean the place up.
She makes new friends. She has a great time.
My son loves it. He's contributing.
These are nice kids.
The Are You Into It volunteer program is a great way for you and your kids to make a difference in the community while making friends. So, if you're into it, or you think your kid might be, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH. Or visit our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
We can't get him to clean his room, but he loves volunteering.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
Lightning only takes an instant. An instant that could end your life or injure you for life. Don't let it end your playing days on the field. Remember, you are in danger from lightning if you can hear thunder. Learn more about lightning safety at www.lightningsafety.noaa.gov. Lightning kills. Play it safe. This message is brought to you by the Iowa High School Athletic Association and your local National Weather Service office.
If you missed Strictly Confidential last week, you missed Gay Fashion Tips.
So I'm sitting here in my Florida State University t-shirt and my pajama bottoms.
You missed what gay DJs name their dogs.
Disco and Boogie are their names.
You missed lesbian Bible study.
And that's my favorite line, too, out of the Bible, like, thou shalt not lie with a man, so I don't, and so what's up with that?
You missed Kiss and Tell.
And this big, tall, handsome Air Force sergeant bent down and kissed me, and I didn't wash my lips for weeks.
You missed The Pursuit of Happiness.
Are you attached, Mark?
Well, see, now this is Strictly Confidential, isn't it?
Stand by your man.
Tune in Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern for Strictly Confidential, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered conversation radio, exclusively on the Head On Radio Network. You know you want to. Stand by.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
This is The Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. National Transportation and Safety Board investigators say they've identified a possible design problem in the Minneapolis freeway bridge that collapsed last week. Investigators are working to verify loads and stresses put on steel plates in key areas of the bridge's frame. At least five people died when the bridge collapsed into the Mississippi River during rush hour. In Utah, rescuers are boring holes in an effort to get air and water to six coal miners trapped in a collapsed mine. Crews say it could take 2 days to reach the area where they believe the workers are located, 1,500 feet below the surface. It isn't known yet whether they're alive or not. In Sadr City, Iraq, U.S.-led forces battled militants on the ground and called in airstrikes that killed at least 32 insurgents and civilians. A dozen people were arrested. The Pentagon announced U.S. forces in Iraq have reached a peak of 162,000 troops. That's the largest number since the war began 52 months ago. USA Today reports the Defense Department's asking Congress for an additional $750 million so it can airlift newly designed armored vehicles to Iraq instead of shipping them by water. Roadside bombs are the leading cause of U.S. casualties in Iraq. Pakistan's private television channels report President Pervez Musharraf is preparing to declare a state of emergency and delay elections there. Musharraf could cite threats posed by Taliban and Al-Qaeda militants. State-run TV, however, quotes officials as saying the reports are false. North and South Korean leaders say they'll hold peace talks in Pyongyang at the end of this month, only the second such diplomatic summit since the end of the Korean War. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki met with Iranian leaders in Tehran today to enlist their cooperation in easing violence in Iraq. Al-Maliki's Shiite-led government has close ties with predominantly Shiite Iran. Homeland Security this week is expected to unveil new rules requiring employers to fire workers found to be using fake Social Security numbers. Authorities also warn of a crackdown on immigrants via INS raids on workplaces. Torrential rains in New York City this morning toppled trees, caused power outages, and flooded subways. It was chaos for thousands of commuters who were stranded. One death is being blamed on the weather. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News, coming up.
You know you can depend on QNN for honest news. Now we want you to know about an honest source of information on one of the country's most desirable vacation destinations, Carmel by the Sea on California's beautiful Central Coast. That source is the best address in Carmel, carmel.com. Just a few simple clicks and you're visiting a website that mirrors all that Carmel stands for: quality, character, tradition, beauty, the great outdoors by the sea, cultural heritage, and the best shopping, charming inns, superb dining, world-class art, music, and theater, a cornucopia of delights. So when you're planning your next getaway, go to the best address in Carmel, carmel.com, for tips on everything Carmel. Then put that information to good use by visiting Carmel by the Sea for an unforgettable getaway. Carmel.com.
A third suspected outbreak of foot-and-mouth disease is reported in southern England. Government inspectors say there is a strong probability two nearby veterinary research laboratories are the source of the outbreak. Just today, Britain eased nationwide ban on transporting livestock, but also told farmers not to drop their guard. The Space Shuttle Endeavour's on the launch pad at Cape Canaveral, ready for this evening's liftoff. For astronaut and teacher Barbara Morgan, it's something she's worked for more than 20 years. Morgan was the backup for Christa McAuliffe in 1986 on the Challenger shuttle. The Associated Press reports one out of four shipments of Chinese seafood hit American store shelves without being inspected as required by the FDA. The House Foreign Affairs Committee is investigating whether Yahoo lied to Congress about its role in assisting Chinese authorities arrest and imprison a Chinese journalist. Recently revealed documents appear to contradict sworn testimony from Yahoo officials. Federal prosecutors have won their first criminal case involving stock options backdating. A San Francisco jury convicted the former CEO of Brocade Communications on 10 counts of fraud and conspiracy. Light sweet crude is trading at $72.15 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up a whopping 154 points to close at 13,657. The Nasdaq ended up 51 and the S&P up 21. There's more on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All better now. 5 minutes past the hour. I'm Bob. And so I needed a couple of extra minutes there. And by the time I was done getting everything fired up, it was 2 minutes before the top of the hour. And it's like, I can't say my name in 2 minutes. Who are we trying to kid? Right, Agnes. It was an interlude. I think the meds are kicking in, dear. Yeah, I know. Let's go to the phones. By the way, you know the phone number, 304-658-5453 or 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, if you want to jump into the queue and have your say, because that's what this is all about. Scott's calling from Massachusetts. Hey, Scott, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing well. You?
I'm doing all right. I wanted to share with you and the listeners some of our thoughts coming back from our trip to West Virginia. And the visit to Larry Gibson's site, his property, and the mountaintop mining there.
Okay.
But before I did that, I'm a resident of the great state of Massachusetts, and have a little story to share with you about our friend that we affectionately call Oven Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
He was running for governor here, and he did this thing which was just really sort of sickening and hilarious at the same time. He did this thing, Mitt's day at work, or Mitt spends a day at work. And what he would do is he would go around with a film crew, and he would do various sort of New England type jobs. So he spent an afternoon on a lobster boat, and they get all these pictures of rugged Mitt out on the high seas, you know,
duking it out with a lobster.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It was a fair fight, I think, at least from an intellectual standpoint. And they'd have him, he drove a garbage truck, you know, or he hung on the back of a garbage truck. You know, the real common working man, right?
Grilled for maple syrup.
And what else did he do? He sold hot dogs at Fenway Park, right? And he came and he visited my company. I worked in a biotech company, and biotech's big here in Massachusetts. And he came and he came to work in the lab. Funny thing is, the woman that works for me that basically held him by the hand during this photo op, basically put him to work. It was hilarious, right? She wasn't going to let him get out of there without doing some actual work. It was pretty funny. But my one perception from meeting him and seeing him in action is that they can do incredible things with plastic these days. You know, he's the most lifelike cyborg, political cyborg I've ever seen.
Yeah, they made an entire politician out of polyvinyl chloride.
Exactly. It's like something from Westworld, you know? I mean, it's like, you know, it's like, wow, he's remarkably lifelike. You know, you could see him just click into politician mode. He's affable.
Hi.
He's funny. He catches on to things quickly, right?
Yeah.
And then, of course, he says something like what he said today, which is just, you know, just completely off the chart.
Well, would you give him a, I mean, should the people of Iowa give him a pass on that, Scott?
No, I think it's completely indicative of his character. That's what I mean. He's plastic.
Right? He really does think there's no difference between being in an RV and being in a Humvee.
Exactly. He thinks that's a completely legitimate thing to say. And, you know, he thinks, you know, and the fact that he's changed his view on things, he thinks that's fine too, you know, because that's what a politician does, right? He's like, yeah, you know, when I'm running for the governor of Massachusetts, of course I'm going to be in favor. I'm going to be pro-choice.
I'm trying to get voted for by a bunch of liberals.
Yeah, it gets onto the national scene, and of course he changes his tune, right? That's all just, you know, that's just part of playing, that's part of what you do.
But to be fair, Scott, I mean, we're not saying that human beings are carved in stone. I'd like to think that I'm not the same guy I was when I was 21.
Right.
That I've grown, I've changed, I've developed. I've grown intellectually, spiritually, philosophically. God knows I've grown physically.
Right.
I'm not saying he can't do that. It's the political opportunism that's behind it, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, that's the distinction. I mean, I think it's unfortunate because, you know, you're right. Someone should be able to say, I used to think this, and a lot of soul searching, times have changed, whatever. I was wrong in the past, or I've changed my thinking about it, whatever. But it's clear that that's not the case in his case. He was like, I was previously running for the governor of Massachusetts, and therefore I said these things. And now I'm running for the president of the United States, and therefore I ought to say these things. Wow. I think those two things are very, they're just fundamentally different.
Yeah, well, they are. And, of course, I love how he keeps trying to come back to, you know, I wrote an article for the Boston Globe, as if, I wrote an essay once in 500 words or less when I was in fifth grade. I wrote an article for the Boston Globe once, and I stopped those vicious liberal cloners. I mean, you were in the science industry, Scott. I mean, was there going to be a cloning shop on every corner?
it's so ludicrous. I mean, it's a funny thing from his perspective, because of course, biotech is huge in Massachusetts, and there's a lot of stuff, a lot of kinds of research that, you know, people who believe that a single cell in a petri dish is a human being, going to have a problem with it. And he, you know, you can see the political gears turning in his head as to how to say, well, I'm against cloning. Now, what was happening? It wasn't cloning at all. It had nothing to do with cloning. And so the article that he wrote in the Globe had absolutely nothing to do with the legislation. Legislation wasn't about cloning. So,
oh my
God! He sets himself up politically to say, "Yeah, I'm against cloning."
Well, see, I understand how the right wing fundies. Now, first of all, there is no set of circumstances that would make me vote for Mitt Romney. Not even a gun to my head. No. So there's no problem for me. His flip flopping is sort of a reverse gilding the lily, as far as I'm concerned, Scott. But where fundamentalists are concerned, I get them, because they don't know what they're getting. They don't know if they're getting a guy who thinks it's okay for boys to kiss, or a guy who wants boys who kiss to be dragged behind trucks like they want them to be. They don't know if they're getting a guy who thinks that fetuses are better than living, breathing people like they do, or that stem cells are just another part of biology. They've got a real quandary for him.
I think they have a real. It'd be interesting to see whether they see through it, you know, whether they do the calculation and they say, this is the guy most likely to be elected, and I figure while he's in there, he'll do what I want, because that's what he's done in the past, right? He did what, you know, when he was in Massachusetts, he bent to the liberal side. When he's here, and we put him in there, he's going to bend to our side. Maybe they'll do the calculation that way, you know. In other words, I don't care whether he really believes it. I just want to make sure he puts the right kind of Supreme Court justices in. I want to make sure he vetoes the bill that I want vetoed, and I don't really care whether he truly believes it or not.
Yeah.
I mean, we shall see. But he would be he'll make an interesting political.
But, you know, I guess in the long run, it's probably going to be Giuliani on that side, just because.
Yeah.
Romney is a threat to him, but at the end of the day, Romney has to come unglued, and he already has been. There's the thing that happened on the radio in Iowa where he just blew up during a break and didn't realize the camera was still rolling. it's there on YouTube if you want to go and find it, and obviously Mitt doesn't like YouTube, because
so it's completely incredible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though it's been videotaped.
And you know, he gets photographed next to the sign of "Say No to Osama, Obama, and Hillary's Mama."
Yeah,
and he says, "Well, you know, I don't read every sign I stand next to somebody holding. It's not like I'm running around
myself.
It's not like I'm carrying it or anything." And then the next photograph is of him holding the sign up.
Right.
He will implode down the road.
Yeah, I think so. But do you think Giuliani could be the standard bearer then?
I think it's almost a foregone conclusion.
Huh.
And you know, that's probably because. This guy, this serial adulterer, this guy who moved his mistress into Gracie Mansion in New York City, is the closest that the Republican Party has to anything resembling normal to run for president. I mean, that's how bad it is.
So they're looking for normal now. Well, okay.
Well, or at least normal appearing, you know, because
normal for so long it would be refreshing.
Well, but no, it's normal appearing. Again, we're in Westworld. Beautiful reference, by the way. I've got to go watch that movie. Yul Brynner, no.
Yul Brynner, absolutely.
Yeah, I saw that when I was a kid, and it just scared the life out of me. I had nightmares for weeks, but they were really cool nightmares.
They were exactly excellent, well-produced nightmares.
Yeah, right. When he pulls the faceplate comes off, and all those little diodes are sitting there beeping, woo!
Yeah, yeah.
You know. But anyway, they're only looking for normal, or what appears to be normal. Because it was the same thing with George Bush. George Bush came out there, you know, and he had his poop kicking boots on, and I'm the president you can have a beer with.
Right, and it's compassionate conservative thing, and people actually believe that.
Yeah, because people are stupid.
Yeah.
Sorry, I mean it just.
By and large, yeah.
Yeah, I mean you didn't buy it, I didn't buy it, nobody listening to this program bought it.
People are misinformed.
Yeah, okay, we'll be gentle that way. We'll be kinder and more compassionate. They're not stupid, they're misinformed. Yeah. By a deliberately misinforming media. But,
exactly, yeah. It's part of a grand, it's part of a vast right-wing conspiracy.
Yeah, right. Precisely. Really. The one that really exists, you know, headed by Richard Mellon Scaife and the Heritage Foundation and the Cato Institute and all those weird people that are wrong.
Yeah,
all those people that are wrong about everything all the time and get millions to be that way.
Exactly.
Nice work if you can get it. But, you were mentioning some impressions of... your trip down into the mountains here.
Yeah. I mean, when we, you know, we got together and you know, we were still sort of flattened by the experience of having seen what's going on at Larry's place. And I just wanted to sort of paint the sort of picture for you and some of the thoughts that we've had since then. You know, you drive up to Larry's place and you go up this, you know, impossibly twisty little road to get up there and everything. You're climbing up into the mountains and up through the trees and everything. And at some point, you actually drive by the entrance to the mine, but you can't quite figure out what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you continue to drive these twisty roads up through the trees, and it's lovely, and you're looking down on the mountains and everything. And you get up at Larry's place up near the top, and meet with him. He's a great guy, and he took us on this little trail. It's a typical sort of trail through the woods. It goes through. It's a real pretty dirt trail. Goes through the woods, climbs up, and then you see through the trees. You see an opening to clear sky. And as you start to see that, you hear a sound. You hear a mechanical sound of engines and the sort of sound of steel, like tank treads, you know, like a gun kind of sound,
mm-hmm.
like construction vehicles. You hear this sound sort of come through the forest. And you crest the hill. Now, of course, that didn't used to be the top of the hill. That used to be halfway up the mountain. But now you're standing on the lip, looking down into the gray pit where there are machines at the bottom of this pit basically scraping the earth off, loading into these enormous dump trucks, reeling those dump trucks back down the road over to the other side of the mountain, over the other side of this flat area, and lifting their tailgates up, just dumping the stuff over the side of the mountain and down into the valley. And there's two trucks and the drag line there, and one comes up, and you hear this industrial horn honk, and the thing dumps its load, meanwhile the other one's running along to dump its stuff over. And then that one comes back, and this one dumps, and that one comes back, and the next one dumps. It's just, I sat there, I couldn't believe the feeling that came over me when I saw it. Now, you know that the sort of rhetoric of good and evil is not something that, I mean, I'm not a religious guy, right? I'm the guy
who
trusts office money, right?
Yeah, okay.
All right? I'm not a religious guy, and so the rhetoric of good and evil has not been especially useful to me. In you know, I like to try to be rational, you know, make arguments that don't involve those kinds of things. But I looked down into that hole, and I tell you, I got frightened.
Yeah, because suddenly evil becomes very, very real, doesn't it? I mean, it exists.
It exists. I mean, I saw it. I could feel it coming up from that. How could people do this? How could they do it? It's so violent. Remembering that, you know, you used to be on that part of the path, looking up the other half of the mountain, looking up.
Mm-hmm.
And now, 600 feet up, and now you're looking 600 feet down into something that basically looks like hell. You know, and for
the sake of perspective, let's talk a minute about these dump trucks and this drag line.
Right.
From your perspective, if I'm guessing correctly, Scott, the dump trucks were relatively small. It's not like they're, you know, to your perspective, these are huge, huge vehicles.
They're enormous, yeah. They're, I think the wheels are 16 feet tall.
Yeah.
The wheels. And then the truck, of course, goes, you know, the dump truck, the bed of the dump truck goes up another, whatever, 10 feet above that. And the drag line is even more enormous than that.
The drag line is 20 stories tall.
20 stories tall. I mean, so, you know, I had that emotion, you know, that I'd seen evil. This is not something I process well, right? These are not words that I use to describe things.
Yeah.
And I started to think to myself, you know, what the hell's going on there? And I came back and I did, you know, we talked to Larry and we talked all about the, you know, the Fourth Circuit appeals case and all that kind of stuff, you know, and tried to do the lawyer thing and see if I couldn't find a wedge in there and everything. But the thing that struck me was just this feeling of evilness. And I started to think to myself, what is that? What would make somebody actually go and build a 20-story tall machine to rip the side of a mountain off? What is that? What is it that makes... I mean, that's an incredible thing to do, right?
Yeah, it is. And the question you're asking is very, very... multi-layered, because it's easy to just answer that, well, greed.
But I like that answer.
But greed is not a sufficient answer either. I don't think a one-word answer will suffice here, because there are, I mean, you know, if it was just common greed, there are other ways for these people to make as much or more money. So there, it has to be a combination of greed and open hostility toward life and living things. You know, sometimes the hardcore right-wing fundamentalists like to refer to liberals and progressives who believe that women's insides should be the business of the women who own the insides as being pro-death.
Right.
Okay. If you want a vision of pro-death, well, you saw it, Scott.
Right.
You saw it.
Right.
That is because, you know, when you're looking at that barren, naked, sterile landscape... it's the ability, and it's kind of like what I was talking about with going to the Shiloh battlefield at the beginning of the program.
Yeah.
It's the ability to know what it was as well as what it is. And when you look at that barren, sterile moonscape that's been created there, you have to understand that that has been created at the expense of everything that walked, crawled, breathed,
right.
moved,
thing.
Or grew in that space. It's all dead.
Well, and you can see that. It has a color, right? It's
dead. Yeah.
It's that gray color. There's not a living thing there. I agree with that. I think, you know, okay, so maybe you're one epiphany ahead of me, because I think the greed thing was what really hit me, because it seems to me, remember we've talked about how, the you know, liberals are such a diverse group. We have so many different interests, and you got your environmentalists and your social justice people, you know, people interested in labor and so forth, right?
Yeah.
But what, to a large extent, those things have in common is this fight against greed. You know, you've got these miners out in Utah, right? These guys...
in an unsafe hole, just like Sago, yeah.
You know, these guys are backing out while they take the support columns out, right?
That's yeah, retreat mining, yeah.
That's their strategy, is to take you know, they've already picked off all the meat, and now they're going in after the bones. And that's actually what they're doing in there. You know, it wasn't good enough to get most of the coal out. Got to get it all out.
Yeah.
This guy comes on TV, the guy who owns that mine. You know, what's the thing we heard him say today? You know, this whole business, it was caused by an earthquake. It wasn't my fault. It was somebody else's fault. Right? You've got six guys down there who may or may not be dead, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got more important things to do than talk about whose fault it is.
Oh, and not just that, but, you know, this guy is comfortable saying, he didn't, you know, if you'd had him hooked up to a polygraph machine while it was going on, Scott, it would have flatlined, just beep, normal, you know, because he thinks he's telling the truth. He thinks it's not his fault. You know, it's an act of God. And as it turns out, every time God does something, it's a disaster, okay?
Right.
You know, nobody ever says, act of God, street suddenly paved with gold. No, act of God is Katrina. Act of God is a negligently maintained bridge in Minneapolis collapsing. Act of God is doing retreat mining inside of a played-out mine, trying to get the last scraps of coal, because as the coal industry described it in the story that I had last night, it's pure profit at that point.
Correct.
And it was retreat mining is described that way, pure profit. So, you know, Mr. Murray can't see the correlation between his determination to pull those pillars and collapse the inside of that mountain, because no matter what happens, when you retreat mine, whether the miners are still in there or the miners are gone, Scott, sooner or later the inside of that mountain collapses.
That's what happens, yeah. That's that's exactly what happened.
And he can't see the fact that, yeah, okay, there were some tremors that brought down that mountain. He can't see any correlation between that and his determination to get every last stinking scrap of coal out of there. He
right.
can't see it.
Well, and, what makes him... So he's sitting now here after this has happened. And what does he think to say? You know, he thinks to say, it wasn't my fault. Give me a... I mean, I'm sorry, but I mean, you know, so I've worked in positions where you're kind of a flak catcher. You know, you're in management and, you know, bad stuff happens and, you know, you have to sort of, you know,
yeah.
you know, circle the wagons kind of thing. I mean, anyone of reasonable intelligence would say, look, you know, today everyone in this company is a miner. And we have one job to do, and that's to get these guys out of there. And we'll talk about what happened and why it happened and whose fault it is later. You know, we have one job and one job only. And, you know, you guys, the media can talk about whatever the heck it wants, but we've got one job, and we're going to get those guys out of there, one way or the other. It's the only job we have to do.
But, Scott, there's a mindset in coal companies that maybe you're not fully conversant with.
Familiar with, yeah.
And that is... This goes back to the days when mules were used in coal mines. Generations back, miners would say, you know, the coal company thinks more of its mules than it does of its miners, because you got to go out and pay money for a mule, but there's always another miner.
And yeah, look who's in that mine, right?
Yeah.
There's a bunch of Hispanic guys down in that mine. It's the new model. Who would do that job? It's so unbelievably dangerous. Well, you know, the people in the position where that's the best job they can get. You know, you're right. And there's, as these guys figure, as long as I have an endless supply of people willing to do the job, it must be a good job.
Well, it's good for them. It's good for the mine owners.
It's great for them.
Right. And so they think in those terms. You've got to understand, every time that a mine boss gets a call that somebody's been hurt in the mine, his first call isn't to the hospital to make sure the miner's okay. His first call is to his risk management department, or his accounting department, or the legal department.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. What's motivating, and this is pure profit, right?
Yeah, pure profit.
It's greed. This guy's not motivated by any kind of concern for anyone else. For any other living thing, no matter what it is, right? I mean, that's what you see when you go to Kayford.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's dead. A complete disregard.
I'm not trying in any wise, Scott, to reduce the scope of what you saw, because you saw the kind of stuff that'll bring you up out of bed at 3 o'clock in the morning with the sweat rolling down your face.
You're not kidding.
But take what you saw at Kayford and multiply that to an area the size of the state of Delaware. Take the state of Delaware and drop it into Appalachia. That's how much of that you saw. That's what's happening.
I'm not lecturing you.
You understand. I'm not.
No, I'm trying to put this together, because you know I think we have the same idea. You know, you can identify the problem and then you want to do something about it. You want to figure out some way to do something about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what I see among progressives is people have lots of different causes, right? I'm big into the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Other people are into immigrants' rights or, you know, other kinds of things. And sometimes I think we're more easily deluded and dissociated in our political power because of that. Whereas the right is pretty good at bringing these crazy combination of things together around their sort of conservative cause and being pretty powerful at it. And I think one of the things, you know, Linda and I have had the discussion about the phrase Republicans, which you've used on the thing, like whether that's a good idea or not. I know you chuckled because you may have thought about it yourself.
I have. Yeah.
But what it says to me, what thing I said about it was, you know, the pig, now Linda says it makes pigs look bad, but the concept is that, you know, pigs represent greed. You know, is there no end to the greed on that?
And pigs left to, I mean, for as wonderful as they can be, I mean, I've got a couple of listeners who have pot-bellied pigs for pets, and they're charming little animals. But pigs are pigs, and pigs are omnivores, and left to their own devices, if one pig dies in the middle of a bunch of other pigs, the ones that are alive will go eat that pig first.
Right.
It is a working metaphor on a number of levels for the way that these people behave.
And I think it's maybe a metaphor. I appreciate that it's multi-layered, and I want to make this a more nuanced thing. But at this point, it seems to me like, you know, the progressives need to be able to get together and recognize that many times we're actually talking about exactly the same thing. We're just talking about it from a different perspective. You know, what would make somebody put those people down in their mind to ask them to do that job? What would make these people blow the top of the mountain off and be completely unconcerned with the toxins and stuff that they're dumping in the water supply of the people who live downstream from them? What would do that? What's the one common thing? What's the thing that would make people want to bring immigrants over here in order to provide a sort of permanent underclass, or however you want to describe the immigration policy? What makes people rampant and uncontrolled capitalism, where people can hoard an unlimited amount of money at the expense of other people, right? And it's this thing that holds us together, I think, as progressives, is to say, you know what, this is why conservatives are so annoyed by us. Because we say, you know what? You just shouldn't be allowed to do that. You shouldn't be allowed to poison that stream, even though you could make an extra buck by doing it. You shouldn't be allowed to exploit these people, even though you can make more money from exploiting them than by treating them fairly. You know, and we ruin their fun. It's like, you know, am I taking food out of your mouth or something? And they say, yeah, actually, you are. Because of the greed. They want more. They think it's correct for them to have it. And when someone says, hold on a second there, you're not thinking about the consequences for other people. They say, you know, what the hell? You're taking away my liberty. And so I don't know. It just seemed to me like maybe, you know, we have a lot more in common with this whole crazy quilt of progressives. Each in our own way, we end up fighting the same fight against the same people for the same reason, it seems to me.
Well, but that's the thing. You're so correct, Scott, in that, NARAL and NOW are out there fighting the good fight. The ACLU is fighting the good fight, and the AFL-CIO is fighting the good fight, and the Sierra Club, and everybody's fighting the good fight, but. We're getting whipped because we're all fighting in niches with very little coordination.
Right.
An enemy divided is an enemy pre-conquered, if you will.
Exactly. Exactly.
At least according to Napoleonic terms. And it seems to still hold true. So that, you know, these disparate elements can never hope to succeed, frankly.
Their strategy is to do that. I mean, this is not an accident that these people have joined together. I mean, their causes are more dissonant than ours. I mean, you got people who want unlimited right to own guns, and people who are, who think four cells in a petri dish is a human being, and yet they cast their votes together in order to get what they want. I mean,
yeah.
I don't see why we couldn't, you know, as progressives.
Well, but that's
tune into some of the other shows on the Horn, you know, and say, hey, that's an interesting concept. They're talking about the same stuff I'm talking about.
Right, but that's the $64 million question, not just on the Horn, but throughout the progressive blogosphere. And you can see it if you go and you wander around a little bit. And I'm not gooning on any particular blog, but you can go and you can see it, and you can see what I identify as a certain self-centeredness as well. The way people, and I've mentioned this a couple of times lately, the way people respond to blogs, they read the original post and then they read their post, and then they come back and they check their post to see if anybody responded to them, and they don't bother with anything else.
Right. Right.
Or people will chase you off if you're not ideologically pure enough.
Right, right.
You can see it all over our side of the debate. Bless his heart, Bart Kopp over at bartkopp.com is as staunchly pro-Hillary as a human being can be. I'm not, but I haven't quit reading his page over it.
Right.
Because he's got a lot of good observations on issues where I do have commonality with him. And there's not enough of that spirit. What's the word we're going for? There is not enough of that spirit of collegiality. That is the one thing that the other side has developed to a high art. Because you can have a silk suit executive who makes $172 million a year and is taken to work in a limo every day. And somewhere out there in redneck land, there's a guy who works for $6.75 an hour who thinks that he has a common interest with him.
That always baffles me.
No, it baffles me too, but it's been put together very successfully because the goal is, you know, we've got to save America. You've got it, and we haven't been so good on our side at coming up with that one rallying cry, save America. Why can't we save America? If America's going to get saved, Scott, frankly, it's you and me and folks like us who listen to these programs and you're out there in the blogosphere and have their feet on the street marching and protesting. They're the ones that are going to save this nation, not somebody who thinks that corporations paying taxes is unpatriotic.
Right, or unconstitutional.
Yeah.
I totally think that's right, and I see some sites coming up in my own area, in the area of the environment, which is the thing that interests me. That some of the environmental sites that are actually branching out more and starting to see the connectedness that they have with people in labor and other places. I think that's a really good sign.
Well, I think you're going to see that growth probably come out of the environmental movement more than any other. Because, you know, you asked a little bit ago, what's the motivating factor that makes these mining accidents and these mining sites happen, and we identified greed. You must remember that on the other side, for the person who is willing to take the money to go and do the evil, not just the person who idealizes the evil and fronts the money for it, but the person who's willing to get on the ground and run the drag line or go into the bowels of the earth or whatever in these unsafe mines, these people are motivated not by some overarching political philosophy, but plain old-fashioned garden variety, same old workaday fear.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a shame you left when you did, Scott, because there's a new, in fact, you may have heard him on the radio if you were listening to anything local on the way home. There's a new round of ads going here, sponsored by the god-awful company called Walker Machinery, all right?
No.
They're a caterpillar dealer, and they're the people who supply those big old dump trucks that you saw.
Did we hear this? I think we might have.
A commercial that said it's a lady answering a phone like some sort of a consumer helpline or something. Yeah. Hello, thank you for calling the Energy Cooperative. And how come my electricity's going out? Well, ma'am, you see, there are a bunch of environmentalists, and they're using your court system to make sure that you can't have clean energy from coal.
No, I didn't hear that.
And a traffic accident
tells you I didn't hear that commercial.
Right, but what I'm, and the thing is, here in West Virginia, that those radio ads, and there's a whole series of them. Someday, environmentalists using our court system may keep you from having electricity. Coal, it keeps the lights on.
Oh, my God.
And they're running every hour, on the hour, on virtually every radio station in this state, Scott. I kid you not.
That's unbelievable.
And what that reinforces, just to come back around to where I was coming from, what that reinforces is fear. Okay, if you look at a politician and look him squarely in the eye and start talking about the problems that coal causes for West Virginia, then what you get is a statement. But West Virginia needs the jobs. Okay, mountain range removal is what, maybe a crew of 20.
Yeah,
on a multi-thousand acre site.
We went down and saw the towns around there.
Yeah,
these are not. All the stores are boarded up. Where's all these coal jobs and all this money from coal? It's not anywhere around where this mountaintop stuff is going on.
No, it's
and that's
not.
That's just a lie.
The whole thing is a lie. The whole thing is a fraud, and it's a fraud. That's what I'm getting at, Scott. It's a fraud founded on fear.
Mm.
And
well, that's tried and true, right? Fear is a tried and true political. I mean, that's got us the last 6 years.
But more so, and you know, there's no way for me to say, you know, I mean, this is not one of those take up thy cross and follow me moments or anything. But if you spend any time in West Virginia at all, you can feel it's like a rippling undercurrent of electricity. You can feel the fear that underpins West Virginia's economy. You know, fear is in this massive ad campaign, and I mean, they're spending millions of dollars on this. And these are the same people who say that the profit margin on coal is so narrow as to make it almost not worthwhile doing if we put any more tax on it.
Right, right.
But they've got plenty of money to spend on this. And West Virginians are terrified. And it's so sad because these used to be among the most fiercely independent people in the entire union. You know, people who were willing to go up a holler and raise four generations of family on the same farm just to be in a place where they felt pretty comfortable that they were being left the hell alone by the rest of the world.
Right.
And now they're scared. Well, if we don't blow up the mountains, I can't finish paying off the above-ground swimming pool.
Well, you know, we came down the mountain from Larry's place, and I don't know how many swimming pools there were around. You know, I mean, I don't know how much running water there was. Really, a lot of the wells are poisoned there.
Yeah.
But you kept seeing these signs, "Friend of Coal," in people's yards.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got to understand, if the Friends of Coal comes to you and asks you to put the sign in your yard,
you put it in your yard.
You put it in your yard, or you will be shunned by the entire community.
Right.
I mean, it is the modern-day 21st century equivalent in southern West Virginia of being asked to put a cross in your yard.
Exactly.
In 14th
feeling.
Yeah, in 14th century France.
Yeah, it felt very strange. It felt like there's tension there. You know, there's a tension. These people are not all willingly putting these signs in the yard. At least it didn't seem that.
No, they're trying to make sure that the people that they think run the show understand that they're good Germans.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
You know, and we all celebrate Hitler's birthday. And you know, I guess under Godwin's law, I've just spoiled the conversation. But really, the tactics are identifiable and recognizable. Keeping a population in fear is part and parcel of running a fascist operation.
Yeah, well, and they have pretty remarkable control over the whole political system too. One of the things we saw was someone stopped us on the street to show Larry this hearing announcement for a hearing, and it was a hearing for the permitting for another mountaintop removal site.
Yeah,
they're gonna take out 4,500 acres, 17 valley fills. They say valley fills like no one's gonna think what those words mean when they're put next to each other. 17 valley fills.
Yeah, well, they're off by one consonant. It's not a valley fill; it's a valley kill.
and the hearing, the public hearing, was on the last day of public comment, and this is the first time this guy had heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it said on the thing, there will be no, in big bold capital letters, no public comment accepted after this date. It was the last date of the sort of statutory public comment period.
Yeah.
That's the day they had the hearing, on the last possible day. You know, it was a little scary because clearly the fix is in, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the machine's like, yeah, we did the public hearing.
Oh, come on, you'll stay in touch. You'll continue to view the process. Wait till you see the sample ballot come out before the November 2008 general election. Look down the line, you know, not at president or senator or congressman or anything, but look down at the local races. It'll be guy with a D behind his name who's pro-coal, or guy with an R behind his name who's pro-coal.
Right, right.
And that's because this movement I'm not being mean to any, because I wouldn't ask anybody to do any more than they're already doing, because God knows how much they are already doing.
Mm-hmm.
But we have not grown our own organic political process yet. You know, every now and then somebody will come out and run on the mountain party ticket or something like that. But, you know, that's third party politics, and it's not going to change anything in this state. It's just not. We've got to grow our own leaders, and maybe because we're in the first generation of the movement, we're not there yet, Scott. But we've got to grow our own people with their own desire to enter the political process and change it. And we're not there, and that's why we won't see people who will campaign and say, you know, I want to put an end to mountaintop removal in West Virginia, because it's political suicide.
Yeah, you won't see it there. I mean, one of the things that I remember, we had this when we spoke the very first time. You know, I had this idea about, you know, we can make coal an irrelevancy. We should be able to do that. Blah 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 blah. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, in here in Massachusetts, thanks in part to energy market deregulation, we have the opportunity or the option to purchase green electricity that does not come from coal.
Right.
But of the fact that I'm looking out my window at a coal-fired power plant right now. And so I went online to find, there's a site called greene.org. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
Green-E.org. And I encourage the listeners to check this out. What you do is you basically put in your zip code. And it tells you what sort of options there are for buying electricity, either directly from your utility or by switching utilities to one that offers, you know, all renewables or no coal or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And they show a map of the country, and it's fascinating to see the states where these options are not available. They're all the coal states.
Mm-hmm.
The coal states have not allowed the restructuring of their energy markets to even allow their own people to buy anything but the kind of energy produced from coal.
We are a managed addiction here. There's no difference between the coal company's relationship to West Virginia, Scott, and the heroin pusher's relationship to the kid outside the schoolyard. There's not a dime's worth of difference. And it's...
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah. I think the rest of us, though, you know, this is a time when, you know, you show the difference between a person, people that are interested only in their own self-interest, and people that actually are other-regarding, you know, people that actually care what happened to other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those of us that would actually prefer not to buy energy that kills people should really go do that if they can.
Yeah.
If they possibly can, right? So I encourage people to go to this green-e.org, because if it's available in your state, you should be buying it, because if you're not, you're basically subsidizing this industry that's doing this to other people.
And, you know, I mean, you guys are doing it, Scott. You and Linda are doing it. What's it doing to your power bill? Are you having to sacrifice and sit in sackcloth and ashes because you've decided to go green with your energy choices?
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, it's funny, actually, because you start to think to yourself, now that I'm buying all renewable energy, maybe I should use more electricity. So they build more windmills, you know? But,
yeah,
of course, I don't do that. But it's a small incremental difference. It's maybe 10% increase in the price.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so whatever your bill is, right, it's 10% more. But you have to, you know, every purchase is a political act. In this market, every purchase is a political act.
Yes, it is.
And you can pay 10% less. But you need to be aware of what comes along with that purchase. The political consequence of saving that 10% is what we've just described, is the sort of the kind of behavior and this complete disregard for life that we've just described.
Part of the hustle that we get down here, Scott, is that we have to have mountaintop removal because it's so much cheaper than mining coal under the ground. Okay? I saw an email that was passed around last week or last few days by one of the folks involved with Coal River Mountain Watch, and he actually went and did the really, really, you know, stuff that makes my head hurt mathematics to figure out what they meant. And by the time he was done, he had figured out that the difference to the average West Virginia power user, consumer, I hate that word, I mean private, residential as opposed to business, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The average difference on a year between coal at the price per ton that's mined underground versus mountaintop removal coal, the price per different price per year is something on the order of $12.
Right.
It's $12 cheaper because we're blowing up the mountains. You know what? For $12 a year, I'll pay the extra $12 if we'll stop
right.
blowing up the mountains.
Right.
I'll pay the extra $100.
I think this is the point, though. This is the, you know, Linda and I hate this term consumer as well. I'm not a consumer. That's not my, that's not what I am. You know, I have to admit, I do consume. And so for those things that I consume, like electricity, I want to know where it comes from. Right? And I don't want my, I don't want to blindly send my check off to some you-know-what who's blowing the top of mountains off, because I can actually, I have that choice. I can actually choose who gets my money. I can vote with my money. And I think that, you know, I have this, I have a dream, you know, I have this dream where people actually think about the consequences of the stuff that they buy. You know, they, No Sweats is a perfectly good example of that.
Yeah.
Right? You think about, how is my, okay, I got to buy clothes, right? I'm going to have to buy clothes. Doesn't mean that I'm a consumerist because I buy clothes. But if I'm going to buy clothes, I'd at least like to buy clothes that don't, that, you know, the extra $1.50 I save isn't because they've got some slave labor working in some offshore island somewhere.
Well, you know, we get a perfect example of that, Scott. We as a culture, and certainly the pro-lifers, get really, really warm and fuzzy and squishy about babies. For good reason. I mean, evolutionarily, biologically, there's a reason
right.
that we feel tender toward a helpless infant because infants are helpless and no more of us if we don't. We're supposed to feel that way.
Right.
That being the case, imagine the fundies out there who, you know, some fundy baby born in the last month, and they went out and they bought them a little Fisher-Price toy. It was going to be the first toy in their crib. Guess what? It came from China, and it's painted with lead. Now, you talk about choices we make in our consumption. There's one of them. Pay attention. You know, what's the old saying that showing up is half the battle?
Right.
You know, so is reading the label.
Right.
So, you know, I actually had to pick up a box of saltines today because I've gotten really food conscious, and I checked to make sure that it said overtly in plain English, made in USA.
Right.
On the other hand, I picked up, you know, being a hillbilly, I love bread and butter pickles. Okay, I don't know if you've ever had them, but they're not sweet pickles and they're not dill pickles. They're somewhere in the middle.
They're like have like a buttery flavor to them?
No, they're kind of sweet, but they're kind of tangy at the same time. They're just a different animal altogether. And I love them. I just love them. When I've got my garden, I make them by the quart, you know, quart after quart after quart after quart of them, because they're just yummy. I picked up a jar at the grocery store the other day because it said, you know, bread and butter pickles, $1. Well, you know, hell, over on the other aisle, they're $3.27 a jar. Well, I picked it up, and it said, designed, dig this, designed. This would appeal to Linda with her being an artist and all. Designed in the United States. These are pickles, Scott.
Right.
You know, this, it ain't the David, okay? It's not the Guggenheim Museum, but these bread and butter pickles were designed in the United States. Made in India.
That's incredible.
And, you know, I have these little moments where, you know, it's that little devil Fred Flintstone on the left side of my shoulder. That says, go ahead, Bob. Just throw it on the ground and smash it, Bob. Just smash it and yell, damn it. You know, and throw a fit about why Americans can't make their own stinking pickles anymore.
Well, you know, because the really high-end jobs are the pickle design jobs. Not the pickle manufacturing jobs. Can you imagine the patent application? You know, a design for a pickle. You know, design for
no, it's
a
yeah, it's
like, pickle.
Yeah, it's like that scene from The Graduate, son. I've got one word to say to you. Are you listening, son? I'm listening, sir. Pickles.
Yeah.
Holy cats!
Yeah, this is a brave new economy.
This is.
I'll let you go, and I'll let you move on. But I encourage you and other people, other folks on the horn, to check out Green-E.
Well, I will, and I know what the answer is going to be for little old us.
But for a lot of other people, hey, man, if you can do it, every little bit helps, right?
Green-E.org?
Green-E.org, yeah. And there's another cool site that just came up that's kind of interesting, you know, amongst us environmentalists, that's actually sort of rational and actually says, you know, how can you connect with the right kinds of things in the market? Is this site called Tree Hugger.
Oh, John Fox is wild about treehugger.com.
Yeah, they're good. That's a good site. That's a good site, I think.
And
they don't say, oh, the market is terrible and capitalism is awful. They say, hey, there's some good products out there.
Yeah.
Here, go buy them. You know, you got to buy a dishwasher. You might as well buy a good one. You know, you got to buy this. You know, got to buy clothes. You might as well buy clothes that aren't made by polluting the streams with dyes and things, you know?
Right, exactly.
So treehugger.com is off. They have these great T-shirts. You know, they say, do the right thing. We won't tell anyone. It's like, you know, one of them says,
it'll be our
secret.
I'm
concerned for the environment. There, I said it. Guilty of little pleasures.
It's it's like what Robert Kennedy said when he was down at Rebecca Chapel down at Rock Creek. He said, you know, I'm an environmentalist. I'm not an environmentalist because I love the trees. I'm not an environmentalist because I'm particularly overly fond of the snail darter. I'm an environmentalist because I'm fond of other human beings, and I want to have a world that's fit to live in for them.
Right.
Environmentalism isn't about the critters. It's about the people. And that, you know, that seems abundantly sane to me.
Yeah. But, you know.
Oh, I am being, if you hang up before I ask this question, Scott, they won't talk to me in the chat room anymore.
Uh-oh.
Any word from the bar?
No, I don't. That's nice. Thanks for the good thoughts. No, there's, I don't hear until November. Can you believe that? November.
You know, that's institutional. That has because they fed the little thing that you filled in the dots on. They fed that through the computer 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, you know what though? They make us spend the whole second day writing just incomprehensible nonsense. You know, they ask 10 essay questions, 5 in the morning, 5 in the afternoon, and I would not want to read what I know we all wrote. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's why it takes till November.
Yeah, what a bunch of people.
Sure.
Right, what a bunch of people who were neurotic messes on the first day.
Exactly.
Managed to come out of a ballpoint pen in an essay book the second day. No. If I was judging or testing or reading or rating any of that, there'd have to be a case of old Overholt down at my feet.
Yeah. Exactly. No, I feel. I mean, I know what I wrote, and I feel bad for those people who have to grade their papers.
Well, hang in November. Geez, that's still kind of cruel.
Yeah.
Well, you know, try not to be a mess, a neurotic mess between now and then.
I've forgotten about it already.
Wonderful, Scott. You take care. It's so good to hear from you. Glad to know you're home safe.
Yeah. Thanks.
Bye now.
Bye now.
Our good friend Scott up in Salem, Massachusetts, he and his wife Linda were here. I got to sit down with them. We had a little breakfast at Tamarack. Had a wonderful conversation. And it's frankly, it's the kind of thing that's kind of inspiring for me. I wish Agnes could have been there, too. But somebody has to stay here chained to the oars, as it were. Stroke, Agnes, stroke! And one of these days we're going to get somebody to sit in here and just beat out the rhythm on the drum for her. Yeah, you're number one in my book, too, in stereo, sweetie. It's quadraphonic! But it was a wonderful time, and I really admire Scott and Linda for coming down and having a look at what I had been babbling about, because I can't do it justice with words. And frankly, you can get an idea by going to websites like crmw.net, or OVEC.org, or ilovemountains.org. You can get an idea there. But it's when everything sort of, it's like a Hollywood camera effect where everything kind of goes and pulls into perspective, and dump trucks that are three stories tall look like matchbox cars from your perspective, and they're sitting on a moonscape that you could literally put the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco across and still have more moonscape left over. When all of that stuff just comes screaming in on you, it'll change you. And it will make you stop and think the way Scott and Linda are stopping and thinking now. And the more stopping and thinking, the greater the chance that we have of changing things. But again, it's going to take a whole lot more Scott and Linda's and folks outside of West Virginia, because those of us and the committed people, oh Lord, to tell you the stories of the people and the commitment that they have, to tell you about people like Bo Webb and Judy Bonds and Maria Gano, and in the chat room our dear friend Nanette, and how hard they and their families work. And they're doing it for people who openly doing it for people who openly hate them. Because you're trying to take away our livelihood. Whatever happened to the free market? You know, 70% of West Virginians disapprove of mountain range removal. That means 70% of West Virginians disapprove of that practice being done to us within the so-called free market. But you see, we don't have a free market, as it came up time and again talking with Scott. I don't have here. Do you think for an instant with me sitting behind this microphone with all of these beeping and blipping lights and all the heat generating the computers and mixing boards and gizmos and gosmos, do you think for an instant that if Agnes and I had a choice to make sure that this was happening with green energy that we wouldn't make that choice yesterday? Well, there's no free market in West Virginia. And we don't get that choice. We're not allowed to have that choice. The closest you can describe electricity in Appalachia is to say that it's run on a model that was perfected in communist Russia. You know, you can have the black car, or you can have the car that's black. It's Hobson's choice. It's the horse by the door or no horse at all. It's Scylla and Charybdis. And we're just in a little tiny boat trying to bob our way through the two of them. So go to those websites Scott mentioned. I think you'll be glad you did. We'll do some news. We'll come back. Your phone calls, if you wish, and some stories. I got at least one prayer meeting story that I got to do or I'm going to bust. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network. Join in at 304-658-5453 or 877-443-2366. It's just that easy. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. A possible design flaw is being looked at as the cause of the freeway bridge collapse in Minneapolis last week. National Transportation Safety Board investigators are looking at steel plates that hold beams in place. Also, officials say they're postponing moving heavy debris so divers can continue their recovery work. In Utah, the owner of a collapsed mine says rescuers could reach six trapped miners in 2 days with air and water. Crews are boring holes where they believe the workers are trapped 1,500 feet below the surface. It isn't known yet whether they're alive or not. In Sauter City, Iraq U.S.-led
In Sadr City, Iraq, U.S.-led forces battled Shiite militia on the ground and from the air, killing at least 32 insurgents and civilians. A dozen people were arrested. The Pentagon announced U.S. forces in Iraq have reached a peak of 162,000 troops, the largest number since the war began 52 months ago. Pakistan's private television channels report President Pervez Musharraf is preparing to declare a state of emergency and delay elections there. Musharraf could cite threats posed by Taliban and Al-Qaeda militants. State-run TV, however, quotes officials as saying the reports are false. North and South Korean leaders say they will hold peace talks in Pyongyang at the end of this month, only the second such diplomatic summit since the end of the Korean War. Iraq Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki met with Iranian leaders in Tehran today to enlist their cooperation in easing violence in Iraq. Al-Maliki's Shiite-led government has close ties with predominantly Shiite Iran. In New York, the nation's largest air carriers have filed a lawsuit against the CIA and the FBI. The suit asks for permission to interview 9/11 investigators and review data to help the companies defend themselves against lawsuits filed by victims and family members of the World Trade Center collapse. Homeland Security this week is expected to unveil new rules requiring employers to fire workers found to be using fake Social Security numbers. Authorities also warn of a crackdown on immigrants in INS raids on workplaces. Torrential rain in New York City this morning toppled trees and caused power outages and also flooded subways. It was chaos for thousands of commuters stranded by the storm. One death is being blamed on the weather. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We have science and business news coming up.
Have you ever found yourself swatting at a fly no one else sees? Chances are you're seeing what we commonly call a floater. Many people have them and have had them for a while. Floaters are condensed proteins located in the gel-like part of our eyes called the vitreous. As we age, this gel becomes more liquefied, and so whatever debris was once trapped inside is now freer to float around. They are typically harmless, but you should check with your eye doctor if you notice new floaters, especially if they appear after a flash of light, or if you should notice a curtaining effect of your side vision. Otherwise, that squiggly critter you see, especially when you look at a blue sky or a white background, is probably with you for life and should simply be ignored. I'm Dr. Nancy Eklund.
The preceding message on eye care by Dr. Nancy Eklund has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your eye doctor.
It was a flawless launch for Space Shuttle Endeavour from Cape Canaveral this afternoon. Astronaut teacher Barbara Morgan is on board, heading to the International Space Station. Morgan was the backup for Krista McAuliffe in 1986 on the Challenger shuttle. A third suspected outbreak of foot-and-mouth disease is reported in southern England. Just today, Britain eased the nationwide ban on transporting livestock, but also warned farmers not to let down their guard. Government inspectors say the outbreak likely started at nearby laboratories. The Associated Press reports one out of four shipments of suspect Chinese seafood hit American store shelves without being inspected as required by the FDA. That's about 1 million pounds of fish. Federal prosecutors have won their first criminal case involving stock options backdating. A San Francisco jury convicted the former CEO of Brocade Communications on 10 counts of fraud and conspiracy. Good earnings reports in the tech sector, including Cisco Systems' 25% increase, are being touted as the reason behind today's upturn in the financial markets. Light sweet crude is trading at $72.15 a barrel on the New York Mercantile. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 154 points at 13,657. The NASDAQ ended up 51, and the S&P also closed up 21. There's more on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Laurel Crisson.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
I don't want anybody to get the wrong impression. I'm not asserting that people in India are incapable of making pickles. I just fail to understand the economy of scale, and it's my own ignorance. I suppose if I sat down and read, I could understand how it's better for America to have its pickles made in India and put people working in pickle plants in America out of work. I'm sure it is economically smarter for some guy who clips coupons for a living. But I just, for the life of me, can't figure out how it's better for somebody who's trying to put shoes on the feet of their children to not have a job making pickles in America. But I'm sure there's a rational explanation from some free trader out there. Now, bear in mind, the person making the pickles in India is making the pickles in India because you can make pickles in India with a worker who's working for you know, a half a rupee a damn day, as compared to actually having to pay some American $6 an hour. Oh, it crawls all over me. It really, really does. And they're good pickles, too. Because I brought one jar home before I saw the Made in India part. And I put it on a bagel that was made in Mexico. With cream cheese that was made in Kuala Lumpur. And I toasted it in a toaster that was made that was made in South Africa. There's a real economy story out there that I hope we'll get to this evening. But right now, to the phones, and David calling from Maine. Hey, David, thanks for waiting, man.
Yeah, no problem. All I can say about that is maybe the reason why the design is so the design needs to be done in America because maybe it's done by like architects like Frank Gehry or I.M. Pham or something like that.
So it just balances, or I mean,
I'm just joking with you.
I know.
I have no
waiting
idea.
For the, I was setting up the punchline, David. You got to work with
there
me.
Is no punchline because apparently
we're the punchline, David.
I know, that's just a joke. That's it. That is the joke. Everything what you say when you say design, where can you go with that? They take the fun out of it.
I tell you what, I will get out the highfalutin digital camera. I got to learn how to put pictures up on the website and stuff. But I'll get out and I'll pick the little macro thing for close-ups, and I'll take a picture of this label, and it says designed in the United States, made in India.
See, and these celebrities, they take the fun out of things as well. Jermaine Jackson, you know when the name of one of his kids is?
What's that?
Your Majesty. I can't make that up.
No, you can't. It reminds me of the bad old days of the first Bush administration when Dan Quayle was vice president, and comedians all across the country were going out of business because they couldn't, because people were in barbershops were giving away Dan Quayle jokes for free.
Mm. Well.
Okay, that was a joke too. So. Oh boy.
I'm still seeing.
I'll be at the Funny Bone this weekend.
No, you know what's stuck in my head still? That Hillary and that I'm your girl, which I think is just, you know.
Yeah.
You're not our girl, Hillary.
I won't take away from her that she's been fighting wing nuts for 15 years. Or 17 years.
But then, Bob, we have to ask ourselves, has she herself become a beltway wing nut? And it looks like, yes.
Well, I did kind of, the answer about, of course I'll continue taking lobbyist money.
Yeah.
Of course I will. And then justifying it by saying, because, you know, some of those lobbyists represent nurses and sheet metal workers. Well, okay, that's kind of, but that's not who we're complaining about you taking the money from, Hillary, honey. We're complaining about you taking the money from the big pharmaceutical industry. You know, the people who want us to poop our way to thinness.
Can't talk about that.
No, that's...
Speaking of things you can't talk about, did you see what We Are Change did yesterday?
No.
They confronted Mayor Bloomberg on the subway for 25 minutes with
the camera. They took the ride with him, did they?
Yeah, they took the ride with him. And this is what you heard. You heard, Mr. Bloomberg, I want to know why you're cutting the benefits for the 9/11 Ground Zero workers. Why are you cutting their benefits? My friend is dying, Mr. Bloomberg. And he's looking down, and the security people are trying to decide what to do. They can't arrest them because I don't know this, Bob, but apparently the last day in New York, see, this is a whole different door opening right now, the last day in New York for people to have video cameras. Conspiracy theorists.
What? Whoa.
Yourself.
No, the backup... What do you mean last day? Last day of what? The last day of a religious holiday that you can...
No, last day to personally have them on the streets. Your own personal video cameras.
No, it isn't.
Yes.
No. No, no. This is the part where you say, no, this is the punchline, Bob.
And they wanted to know why they were taking part of their rights away, their freedom of speech.
So people can't be on the streets of New York City with a video cam anymore?
I believe so. That's what I got from the impression. He said, this is the last day we can do this. So that's why they jumped on that subway. They were literally like 4 feet away from him. And they were asking, you can go to We Are, people, if you want to check it out, you can go to wearechange.org. And he doesn't push him or anything. He just sits right there, and there's actually two cameras on him, and they're asking him questions. And Bob, he can't handle it. He's smirking, and he can't handle somebody saying, why'd you cut the benefits? Why aren't they getting their money? Could not answer. Just looked down, had no idea what to do.
Oh, I got to see this.
In some ways, you know, I hate to say it, but that right there reminded me a lot of George W., with the smirk on his face.
Yeah.
And he just couldn't handle it. He didn't even ask one question. What's really good about the video, though, at the end, see, this is why I like some of these videos. They're really, they're like New World Order scum and all of this, but they talked to a cop at the end, and they go, don't you realize? They go, we got people coughing up blood, and nobody's doing anything about him. And he was like, I'm doing this for my friends. I'm doing this for my family. And at first, the New York officer, he was really hesitant, and he was like, I don't understand. No, you can't do that. You can't do that. That's. But as soon as they kept talking to him, they explained the situation. And by the end of the time of having the camera on him and talking to him in a polite fashion, in a sincere fashion, a cordial fashion, they won him over to understand why they were out there.
Doesn't seem like that big a reach to understand. I mean, the provision of health care and resources for the people who were first responders at the 9/11 site, at the Twin Towers site, has become, it's a national blight. It's a national shame. You know, Michael Moore didn't have to go out and dig very far to find the people that he took to Cuba. There are hundreds of them, if not thousands.
I just think, you know what it is? I really think it has to come down to what they show in those training videos in the police world. Who are their instructors and all of that? And what exactly they say about the the radical mobs on the New York City streets with cameras. They just want to ask one question. He tried to get an interview with Bloomberg. I mean, this is the only thing he could do. This is how sad it is, people. He's on a train. Let's talk about this. He's on a train. He's literally on there. He's pretending that he's one of them, basically, with like two or three security guys. And he's like, the guy with the camera is like 5 feet away from him. And see, the thing is that he can't escape from both questioning. So one guy's questioning him, another guy's questioning him, and they both have the cameras on him constantly. And yet he wouldn't even take one question. And everyone else was looking around like, yeah, those are good questions.
And, of course, you know, you can't get answers to those questions in a normal journalism setting because the journalists won't do journalism.
That's true. And then they also pointed to it. They go, well, why is that guy so irrational? Well, he's irrational because he can't get an interview. He can't get – these questions aren't being answered, and people are dying. People are dying at ground zero, and they've got their money cut. They're not getting any money, really. It was butchered. And there's no answers. There's nothing.
Jesus.
It's, you know what it is? It's and this law, people, I want you to look into it if it turns out to be true, which it seems like. They're taking the cameras away on the streets. What does that tell you? They don't want this protest, this dissent. It'll be interesting to see how many people start carrying cameras now because video and whatever.
Okay, well, I'm looking at the report now about the cameras on New York City streets. It comes from Infowars.net.
Yeah.
So
not that reliable.
Not that reliable, but I can understand. But again, if in fact this is the case, David,
right.
this is further evidence of the march of fascism in this country.
It's a shade of truth. That's what I noticed about Alex Jones. I know a lot of people like to harp on him and say, what a wacko. But if you listen to Alex Jones' broadcasts, and or you just listen to like a two-minute YouTube video, because that's all you really have to listen to, Bob. I mean, he says the same thing over and over again. Shadow troopers, New World Order, elite. I mean, that's the message he's marketing. Always one topic over and over again, the same DVD.
Okay, you want to know where this comes from? Now, in the course of this conversation, I've been able to just sort of trace it back. It's an article by Ray Rivera from the New York Times, June 29th. Mm-hmm. Some tourists, amateur photographers, even would-be filmmakers, hoping to make it big on YouTube, could soon be forced to obtain a city permit and $1 million in liability insurance before taking pictures or filming on city property, including sidewalks.
There it is, Bob. That's there's your sign of taking away your the media.
Yeah, well, and you understand why, because citizen journalism is a real problem for entrenched power in the United States, David.
I would imagine so. I mean, all of the YouTube and all of the personal MySpace videos and all of that, the video Google, it's going across the world. Imagine how many more viewers you get than just showing it on a public access channel. They don't even need public access anymore.
Jesus. New rules being considered by the Mayor's Office of Film, Theater, and Broadcasting would require any group of two or more people who want to use a camera in a single public location for more than a half hour to get a city permit and insurance.
I wonder how long that's going to fly. It doesn't sound like it can fly.
Well, it's also not saying that it's been passed yet.
That's true. But unless that guy Luke, I mean, he said it in the video a few times. He said, this is the last day we can do this. And I guess they know something we don't. And I think he even brought a policeman. He goes, you can't do this. You can't do this. And the policeman said, that's against the law. He goes, no, it isn't. He said, like, this is the last day.
Oh, this is amazing. The rules define a single site as any area within 100 feet of where filming begins. Under the rules, the two or more people would not actually have to be filming, but could simply be holding an ordinary camera and talking to each other. Oh, for heaven's sakes.
Maybe we could get somebody from New York to clarify it and tell us what's going on. Obviously, probably we can't do that this week because of the chaos of the storm.
Well, the New York Civil Liberties Union is distressed about it.
Yeah.
They say if the rules are strictly interpreted, it would have the effect of basically shutting down videography, and warns that the rules set the stage for selective and perhaps discriminatory enforcement by police. And there you have it. Because, you know, it's not going to stop the police, because it'll be part of their public safety duties to videotape demonstrators. And there's your answer, David. There's your answer.
There it is right there.
Because how much did protesters just win from the government for what was done to them in the shutdown of free speech around the 2004 Nazi Republican convention in New York?
800,000 to a million?
Yeah. That's why. See, that's the way fascist authoritarian government thinks. The problem wasn't the clampdown. The problem was the people exercising their rights. So the remedy, therefore, becomes one of eliminating the rights, not eliminating the clampdown.
I'm telling you, Bob, when you see Bloomberg smile when he tells him the story about the Ground Zero workers suffering and coughing up blood and all of that,
yeah.
It'll creep you out, man.
Oh, I'll go see it. I will go and watch it. But I know it'll creep me out because Michael Bloomberg's smile looks like a razor wound. It really
does.
That's
true.
You know, that thin-lipped kind of, yeah.
Bob, before I go, I'd like to leave you with this quote.
Okay.
I pick the lesser of two evils. From Master and Commander.
Yes. Always choose the lesser of two weevils.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorites.
All right, Bob.
All right, David. Take care. You too. Bye now.
All right, later.
Let's see. Shifting gears, if you don't mind, for a moment, please. I want to let you know something, and this is serious, and it's sad. Those of you who listen to this program have from time to time heard the commentary of our good friend, radio psychologist Dr. Rick Goodner, who calls in from Texas. He's a brilliant man with a heart as large as the state that he lives in. And a few days ago, and you know, there was never any mention made on the air about it because it's not the kind of thing that Rick would be prone to talk about. But all during the time that you have heard Rick on this program, he's been doing double duty, if you will. Because in addition to continuing to do what he does so very well, he has been taking care of his wife, Patricia. Because Patricia was carrying on her own heroic battle with cancer. Rick lost Patricia this past weekend, Saturday, in the morning. I got an email from Rick. And he said he would be incommunicado for a while, taking care of things. I haven't heard what the plans are, what the arrangements were, if you will. But Rick lost everything in the world to him, and his grief is deep. And I just didn't want to go. I meant to mention it last night, and I didn't, and I felt horrible for not. But I wasn't going to let another night go by without making mention of it. Because we have succeeded in a large degree in creating community here. And the losses that we suffer and the triumphs that we achieve are felt and are shared among us all. And I know that I knew that you would want to know that one of those who considers himself a part of us, this little family, we few, we happy few, was enduring a tremendous loss and an even more tremendous pain. And Rick, if you're listening, we love you. We love you. We all love you. We'll take a break and come back with a couple of stories that really do have to round out any prayer meeting edition. And after that, well, coming up at 9 o'clock, Strictly Confidential with our good friend Peter Godbold. Stick around. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Obviously need to address the issue of the Saddam Hussein execution. Have seen the video that was taken on a cell phone, or have read about the circumstances surrounding the execution. It's pretty evident that the absolutely worst thing that could have happened with the carrying out of the sentence after the long trial of Saddam Hussein happened. And if we had sat down and made a list and said, all right, here's a list of six or seven different things that could happen, what would be the very, very worst thing that could happen, not only for us, for the United States, but for the world and for the Iraqis themselves? And it seems to me that if not first, then definitely second would have been what indeed did happen.
The Dr. Bill O'Brien Show, Tuesday to Thursday, noon to 2 Eastern, here on the Head On Radio Network.
Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hello, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, go to irs.gov and search for identity theft to find out what to do. That's irs.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484.
Twenty-eight before the hour. I think I was about to choke on my tongue or something. It's got roots in my liver, you know. Just like Granny Clampett says. Let's see. Okay, first of all, a little audio just to make things interesting, just to break up the monotony of my my voice droning on and on and on. You remember when Bill O'Reilly had a hissy? Because he said the Daily Kos was a hate site because they had one of those photoshopped pictures that showed Joe Lieberman on his knees in front of George Bush reaching his hands into George Bush's fly. It's a hate site, O'Reilly said, orally said. Well, you know, there's hate and there's hate. I mean, I play on this show. I call Mitt Romney names, but, you know, only after he's earned them by saying things like his son driving around Iowa is the same in an RV is the same as American soldiers driving around Baghdad in a Humvee. I'm sorry, I'm playing charades with Agnes now. Yeah, and then there's the dog on the roof, you know. So, you know, when you earn it, we can have some fun with you. On the other hand, there's real honest-to-God out there malicious, malignant, malevolent hate, such as you can get from Christmas defender John Gibson over at Fox Radio. Because remember, Fox Radio, there's not just Fox TV, there's Fox Radio, and you have to do double duty. If you happen to be in front of the camera at Fox, they build a radio show around you, too, so they can try to leech a little bit more evil out of you as the day progresses. So John Gibson was on his show 5 days ago, The John Gibson Show, eponymously titled, and they decided they were going to talk about fraud. Fraud was the topic. Agnes, the audio, if you please.
Fraud alert! Fraud alert! This is Angry Rich's favorite subject, and it's going
now,
to
wait,
be
wait,
mine
wait.
As well.
Wait. Angry Rich is this creature who is John Gibson's executive producer. That's his handle on the show. He's Angry Rich. So back it up to the beginning. Let's try this again and see if I can avoid interrupting.
Fraud alert! Fraud alert!
Fraud!
This is Angry Rich's favorite subject, and it's getting to be mine as well.
Fraud alert!
Our John Gibson program, Fraud Alert, today focuses on the biggest fraud now running for president. And that takes some doing. We're talking about the Breck girl, Silky, the former senator from North Carolina, the baron of a 28,000-square-foot manse, the protector of the poor, while ensconced on a pillow of $100 million.
Here it comes.
A man who hoarded his wife's cancer as a fundraising gimmick.
John Edwards today was going after other Democratic candidates, and other by other he meant Hillary Clinton, for taking money as political contributions from Rupert Murdoch or from certain employees or executives of either the Fox News Channel or News Corporation, which owns the Fox News Channel. Edwards has
okay, stop it, Agnes. Stop it. Stop it. How does anybody listen to this guy's radio show? Now, I know I probably drive some people crazy, but I don't do 3 hours talking like this. No, I don't. 3 hours of that every day, and the guy's getting paid like $1 million a year or something. Whew. Well, poor Rupert Murdoch, he doesn't have enough money to pay me because I won't go and lie. You got to pay these people a bunch of money because every day that John Gibson, Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, these creeps, Rush Limbaugh, every day that they get, they got to have a lot of money because every day that they get behind the microphone, they're taking their karma out behind the building and just gang raping it. And it takes a lot of money to make you do that kind of thing. It takes a lot of money to make you so damn low. Lower than a snake's belly in a wagon rut, I swear. To make you get on the air and call a man's wife a whore. Now, I do not suppose to speak for progressives or liberals anywhere. I'm not anybody's mouthpiece. There are very few politicians on this program because I don't ever want to be deemed as being anybody's mouthpiece. I'm talking for me and nobody else. If you happen to agree or to share some of my sentiments, the more the merrier. But I'm no one's mouthpiece. I can, however, tell you a little bit about the attitudes, and I don't know if they still exist or not, because, frankly, conservatism may have killed it out. We talked about that at the top of the program. But I can tell you a little bit about the attitudes that prevailed when I was a boy growing up in Alabama. And the attitudes that prevailed among the people that were here here on the mountain when we'd come up here for vacations when I was a child. Because all of those people, you know, Senator Clinton's right, it does take a village to raise a child. because so many people impacted my upbringing. Not just mom, dad, my sisters, my brother, but a whole range of people, grandmothers, aunts, uncles, friends, family, teachers, Sunday school teachers, the little old blue-haired ladies who gave me a sense of what it meant to have a moral compass, if you will, down in the basement of the Baptist church. And of all those people who I have just referenced, not one of them would sit still for a second while the likes of John Gibson or his angry, rich executive producer called one man's wife a whore. I don't like the word. I don't like the attitude that it dredges up. Once again, another right-wing effort to make women dirty things when they're the most magnificent part of creation of the human species, if creation is a word you want to use. A whore. John Gibson's executive producer, angry rich, called John Edwards' wife, who is battling cancer, who will die of it, who will die of it, a whore. A whore. Oh, well, and you know, see, I know how right-wingers say, no, Bob, he didn't say she was a whore. He said that John Edwards whored her out. Well, if you've been whored out, then you are a... I know this is hard for right-wingers and Bush voters to comprehend, but if you've been whored out, that makes you a... Come on, fill in the blank. I guess it's a good thing that John Gibson and Angry Rich live in some ivory tower somewhere in New York City looking down on the little peons around Central Park. Because that's how they think of ordinary human beings. Because I would like to think, that if John Gibson and Angry Rich tried to walk the streets of Memphis or Birmingham or Nashville or Florence, or Greenville, Alabama, or Mobile, or East Aboga, or Cleveland, Tennessee, that they wouldn't make it to the end of the block before they were bloody pulps. Not because of any particular preference for Mrs. Edwards or Mr. Edwards, but because there are things in civilized society that if you do it to another human being, you have some really evil stuff coming your way. You've got some real retribution on the way. Now, John Edwards is running for president of the United States, so he cannot go up to John Gibson or Angry Rich and beat him about the head and shoulders with the butt of a pistol. But God knows they've earned it. God knows they've earned it. But they don't have to deal with people. They sit up in some studio and call men's wives whores. And mark my words, John Gibson will be on the TV box sometime a couple of days after Thanksgiving talking about how the liberal secular humanists are out to get our Christmas and trying to take the baby Jesus out of Santa's sleigh. Good Christian, that John Gibson. Good Christian. A man who hoarded his wife's cancer. Oh, see, Bob, he didn't say they hoarded her. It was her cancer, and cancer's a whore! No, cancer is a horror. Ask anyone with family who's been through it. It is a horror. A horror. But this is right-wing. This is right-wing hate radio. It's what's expected. It's what keeps the lights on. And so there won't be a Howard Stern moment, or not Howard Stern, Don Imus. There won't be a Don Imus moment for John Gibson and Angry Rich. Because there's no one to call him on it except me and a few other liberal talkers out there. There's me, there's Malloy, there's Stephanie Miller, there's Tom Hartman. There's, John Fox, Joe Vecchio, Guy James, Peter, Dr. Bill, Mark Levine. And we try. We're out there every day, and we're trying to let America know. But Katie Couric won't have time. She, a cancer survivor herself, who lost a husband to pancreatic cancer, I believe it was. She won't have time to make sure that John Gibson and Angry Rich are taken from the airwaves and never allowed to return. Because, you see, John Gibson's part of the club. And let's see, who else? The Brian Williams won't have time. Britt Hume, God knows, he works for the same people. He thinks the same thing. Charlie Gibson, no time. God, did Keith Olbermann cover this story? I hope he did. But, I guess there are some who would say we live in a better society for the fact that nobody's gone out and slapped John Gibson in the face with a glove and demanded that he meet him for pistols at 20 paces. Somehow or another, that's supposed to make us better. I don't know if it does. He called the woman a whore, and he has gotten away with it. This story is 5 days old. I held on to it for a prayer meeting, because I save these stories for prayer meeting. This story is 5 days old. You hear the crickets, do you? To the phones. Luke is calling from Knoxville. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Evening, Bob. Well, like I say, and I wonder if Sunday, if old Howie Kurtz will mention this at all.
No, don't wonder.
Or he'll mention it, but he'll just probably do it one of his things and not comment on it. This was done. Okay. Well, you should be having about a 15, 20-minute discussion with some other people talking about it. Remember, this is the same kind of groups that they even go after their own. I mean, remember in 2000 in beautiful South Carolina?
Yeah, what they did to John McCain for adopting that baby. Yeah.
Because they didn't go, like I've always said, you go after John McCain, that's fine. He stuck his face out there. But when you go after his family?
Well, look, John McCain's...
It's like I said, the mob doesn't even do that too much anymore.
John McCain's crazier than a sprayed roach, Luke. We all know that. But you know what? He's got a 19-year-old son in the Marines in Iraq, and he's got another son in the Naval Academy.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Mitt Romney's got 5 sons who can't be bothered, who are serving their country by helping Mitt get to be president. I'm sick of it.
Well, we've had 6 years of Barbara and Jenna.
Yeah.
We can't be. We'll send everybody else's family.
But they're cute. You can't expect the. No. You can't expect the cute to serve their country. Their job is being cute.
And they have to work at it, but It's like I say, it's hard for them to look cute when they're sitting there and you realize they're smashed. They're holding on, each one of them holding on to a glass of bourbon or something. And
you know that old saying, Luke.
Secret Service people letting them drink illegally.
Oh, I know. You know the old saying, don't you? No bush is ever drunk so long as they can hold on to one blade of grass and not fall off the earth.
This too is true. Oh, I sent you the email just a minute ago, the piece from Crooks and Liars with Mr. Scavara, and I tell you what, I wrote in there, I said, if the DNC has one active brain cell, just one, before he falls off out of his 15 minutes, I'd have him filmed half a dozen commercials, and like each month I'd run a different one, and I'd run it in the states where the straw polls and all these are going, because like I say, he puts a human face on what the tragedy of the American healthcare system is.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that we've talked about before. I said the biggest crime that they've done over the years, the few years for the Iraqi war is, that's why you can't take pictures of anybody. You know, that's why this is the most depersonalized war. That if you didn't know somebody, you know, it's in your family, other than Pat Tillman, Lindy England, Jessica Lynch, there's like one or two other people that you would know by name that's in the war. That's it. That aren't generals.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
And I mean, that's what this is. This is just a totally depersonalized war. It's like, well, we can't let anybody put, that's why they won't let them film the caskets.
Right.
You know, they won't, you know, won't.
Well, that's why blogs got shut down. That's why it's so hard for our soldiers to get email out. I've had a couple of emails just in the last couple of weeks from folks who are over there and finding some way to listen, because they're desperate for the truth. They're hungry, not desperate, hungry, because, you know, they turn on Armed Forces Radio and they get, my friends, I take OxyContin light with my orange juice every morning. You know, the American taxpayer is paying Rush Limbaugh to get his programming over to the armed forces, because, you know, it's good for them.
I tell you, the one that got the beat was last night. I turned over and watched flipping through channels. Hang on a second. I'm sitting here. I've got Oberman on mute. Mr. Gibson is the world's worst tonight.
Good. Good. I'm glad. I'm glad Keith caught up with him.
Yeah, but I was watching the Big Giant Head, and he was on the rampage last night and all this stuff, and he was on him about the fact that, you know, some of the Democrats voted against this thing. And I'm sitting there going, you know, Bill, in 16 months. I wonder if a President Hillary Clinton might declare you an enemy combatant.
Oh, God. You know, in some ways you wish it could be, you know, just go and get him. Go and get him. Put him in the, give him the orange.
We've got some empty rooms now down at Gitmo. Come on, Bill. You need a tan. Come on. You've been in the studio too long. Let's go get you some tan time.
Yeah, but see, I don't want these guys forcibly muzzled. I just want a chance. I want a chance to win the argument intellectually.
Well, I know that, but I just like to take him down there for about a two week visit.
A 3-hour tour. Yeah, I know.
Welcome to Club Gitmo.
Yeah, after all, Rush, you've got the T-shirt. You sell them, right?
Yeah, sort of like, if you want to talk about it, we figure you ought to experience it for a bit, just so you can give it that first hand approach.
And Rush, guess what we do with this broom handle? We don't sweep the floor, buddy. Never mind.
We're going to give you blue pills, but guess what? They ain't OxyContin.
Yeah. Oh.
It's Alestra. Yes.
You know, I saw a display for that stuff in the drugstore today. It's real. Oh, my God, it's real. There's even a little telephone that you pick up, and you press a button for English or Spanish.
Oh, good.
So, you know, so it'll tell you, you know, what it does. The treatment effects. They're not side effects. They're treatment effects. Oh, my God. Hey, Luke, I've got to roll on. I got one more call to hit before we go. Thanks so much, my friend. Talk to you soon. Bye now. And Alan calling in. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. I had to get my hazmat license renewed.
Yeah.
And now you don't just have to take a test. Now you have to get a background check. So I had to do that on the Internet. I had to pay this company, which turned out to be a private company. I had to pay them $94.
Holy cow.
And then I had to go to a place and have all my fingers printed. And this was also like a private company working for the government.
Sure.
And the guy who printed my fingers, who held my hand and printed my fingers, which I didn't really like, he had a Bush Cheney 04 sticker, big sticker behind his desk.
Well, where did you have to go to get this done that he would be allowed to have one of those things?
Well, it was a private contractor for the government to do fingerprints for people.
Oh, I think I'd call the ACLU or something just to make a little trouble. Once you've gotten your certification.
Yeah. I already have it. I'm just trying to get it renewed.
That's what I mean. Once it's renewed and you know it's renewed, I'd make a stink. There's no reason that you should have to put up with that. I mean, that's harassment. You're going and you're getting fingerprinted for a hazmat recertification, and there's a guy with a Bush Cheney sticker? No. Wrong.
Also, on their computers, I noticed on their computers there in their office, they have Choice Point.
Well, that's probably how they do your background check.
Yeah, you know about Choice Point, don't you?
I know lots about Choice Point. I wouldn't trust them with a bag of poop.
They even purged people off the voting list in Mexico.
You're darn right they did. And frankly, you know, if you mine deep enough or drill down deep enough into the system there, for all I know, there's a copy of every phone conversation we've had on this program. That's Bushmerica. That's what Choice Point does for Bushmerica.
That's right. It's like fascism.
Well, it's not even like it. It is it. This is fascist conduct. I hate to use the word. It sticks in my mouth like something vile. But the sooner we start calling it what it is, then maybe we can finally begin to remedy it. You know what I mean, Alan?
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, on another subject, that I drive around the countryside a lot, both in Alabama and all over most of the country. It seems like I'm seeing more and more extreme poverty. I mean, I'm seeing people live in shacks.
You are seeing the Republican dream coming true, Alan. They talk about a rising tide lifting all boats, but they never talk about people having boats themselves. Ah, darn it. Lost Alan's connection. Call back tomorrow night, Alan. We'll finish the conversation. Well, I suppose that's pretty close to it. I still have one more prayer meeting story that I still haven't gotten to. We'll hit it tomorrow night. I got two prayer meeting stories that I haven't gotten to be fair. The other one, we will have some commentary by the writer who broke the story. We'll be joined tomorrow night by Max Blumenthal. I hope you read Max's stuff. I know you've seen his movies. Thomas Shoemaker, his videographer, was on the program last week and talked a little bit about the Koofy Fest video. I don't know, Koofy, Queefy, I'm not sure, Koofy. Of course, they also went to the Young Republicans Convention and found all those young Republicans who said, you know, I got a bad knee, I can't join the military. So Max was the guy in front of the camera. Thomas was the guy behind it. Max will be on the show tomorrow evening to talk about a program. Oh, God. You remember Stephen Baldwin? I'll just kind of leave you with this one because I don't want to give you all the nuts and bolts of it because we're gonna do it tomorrow evening with the guy who found out the skinny on it in the first place, Max Blumenthal. But you remember Stephen Baldwin? He was in Biodome with Pauly Shore, you know, playing an idiot. Well, he didn't have to act. The youngest of the Baldwin brothers. Shortly after 9/11, he turned into a hardcore fundamentalist. Well, he's involved with a group now that wants to help our soldiers in Iraq relax when they're not out there with bullseyes on their backs, doing... what is the mission? I don't know what the mission is anymore. But when they get back to the barracks, when they get back to forward operating base, whatever, this right-wing evangelical religion industry organization wants to make sure they can relax real good. So they're sending free copies of Left Behind Eternal Forces video game. You know, the video game where you, as a member of the military, get to shoot down homosexuals, non-believers, atheists, and wrong believers so that you can help Jesus come back. You remember, we've talked about that. Right-wing Christians are sending those to our soldiers. Max Blumenthal broke the story, I believe, in The Nation. And he'll be on the program tomorrow night. Thanks, Agnes. I know you didn't feel so good, babe. But you'll feel better when the medicine kicks in. Thank you, Ben Birch, who dodged the tornado this afternoon. The hardest working man in liberal talk. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to our IT consultant, Peter Godbold, who is up next with Strictly Confidential. Thanks to the United Brotherhood of Carpenters, who are building the American dream, and by helping us start this network, are also saving the American dream. And always, 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 Gina, RMR, it's all for you. Yeah.
This is the Quality News Network. The Space Shuttle Endeavour is safely on its way to the International Space Station after a flawless launch from the Kennedy Space Center in Florida 90 minutes ago. It's a poignant journey for teacher in space Barbara Morgan. She's been waiting to go up for 22 years and was Krista McAuliffe's backup in the tragic Challenger flight in 1986. National Transportation Safety Board investigators say they've identified a possible design problem in the collapsed Minneapolis Freeway Bridge. The NTSB has also taken over security at what is now deemed a death scene investigation site. 16 people have been arrested for trespassing. 8 bodies are still believed to be trapped in the wreckage. 6 miners are still trapped deep inside a Utah coal mine as rescuers employ Herculean methods to get to them. It's expected to take 2 more days to reach the men. They haven't been heard from since the cave-in on Monday. At least 32 insurgents and civilians were killed by coalition forces in Sadr City, Iraq today when airstrikes were called in to take out an Iranian arms smuggling group. 12 people were arrested. A senior U.S. military commander reports that Iranian-based explosives are undermining Iraq's security. There were 99 attacks using the improvised explosive devices in July. That was the highest number since counting began in December. USA Today reports the Defense Department is asking Congress for an additional $750 million to airlift newly designed armored vehicles to Iraq instead of slowly shipping them by water. Roadside bombs are the leading cause of U.S. casualties in Iraq. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki met with Iranian leaders in Tehran today to enlist their cooperation in easing violence in Iraq. Al-Maliki's Shiite-led government has close ties with predominantly Shiite Iran. A tornado touched down and carved a path of destruction through Brooklyn, New York this morning, accompanied by torrential rain that fell at the rate of 3 inches an hour. Thousands of people were inconvenienced as roofs peeled off apartments, cars flipped sideways, and trees popped out of the ground. One person died in the chaos. Underscoring the consequences of